Today is Friday, and it's March 16th, year 2000, and welcome to spyman.ca, and welcome to our show Exposed. I'm Agent Ladybug, and we have this special briefing that I'm recording now with a very special guest. I'm very honored to have our very special guest, Eric Hufschmid, and Eric is a software developer, but what he's really done that's very important is he's written a book called Painful Questions, one of the first books that have ever come out on the 9/11 question, and he's got the inside scoop on Larry Silverstein. It's a major insurance scam. So welcome, Eric.
Oh, glad to be on your show.
Now, Eric, what do you know about this Larry Silverstein, the owner of the World Trade Center? He also owned the World Trade Center number 7. And what happened just prior to the 9/11 situation, he got a 99-year lease for the Twin Towers only for 5 weeks. This is my understanding before 9/11. What is this shocking news, and what do you think is going on here with Larry?
Well, it was about 6 weeks before the attack occurred. He got the 99-year lease. It was actually in the works before that, and people like the Governor Pataki were helping him to get it. It wasn't just him, you know. It wasn't just a coincidence. There was an actual attempt to get him, to give him control over that tower, because they had to have control over it in order to conduct this attack. Because as soon as he got control of the tower, there are reports of him changing security and maintenance personnel. So he started bringing some of his own people in. He didn't get rid of everybody, but he brought in some of his own people, you see.
So this is highly important then.
It is, because that is what gave him access to the buildings. You see, before that, they were government buildings. The two towers were built and controlled by the government. They were too expensive for an ordinary construction company, so the government had built them and it was in control. And Larry Silverstein had this building 7, which was 47 stories. It was a big building, but he was the landlord of building 7. And so when he got control of the towers, he had all three of them, and plus the rest of the complex, the little buildings and the shopping mall and all that. But so once he got control of it, he had access to do anything he wanted with those buildings. And he brought a friend in to help, Frank Lowy, a billionaire from Australia.
Yes.
He became the landlord of the underground shopping mall of the World Trade Center towers. So the two of these people, Larry Silverstein and Frank Lowy, became the landlords of the building. And Frank Lowy, you have to look at who Frank Lowy is, because, you see, before, if you go back to the 1940s, Frank Lowy was one of the Zionists fighting the Arabs to help get Israel established in the first place. See, these are not just ordinary people. Take a look at who they're friends with, who they work with, and you'll find there are hardcore Zionists involved with these people. And Larry Silverstein, people think of him as an American, but he was getting phone calls every week from Benjamin Netanyahu.
Oh,
now this
Benjamin, and he's in the picture right now in politics in Israel. That's highly important.
Well, you have to ask yourself how many landlords in America are getting personal phone calls. The news report said he would get them every Sunday. From Israel? From Benjamin Netanyahu? How many landlords get that? This is a very close friend. This is someone who works with these people. So we have he's got a relationship with Frank Lowy, this Zionist to help get Israel established. He's friends with top Israeli officials. They all, in fact, several of them called after the attack just to talk with Larry Silverstein. You know, the news reports make it sound like, oh, they're just asking how are you doing and how is New York. But think about it. How many landlords get phone calls by top Israeli officials? So this is the connection that people don't quite get. The connection that Silverstein has to the Zionist movement and the Israelis. You see, and he was good friends with Ariel Sharon.
Ariel Sharon as well?
Well, they were all calling him. I mean, he would talk to them on the phone. There, I don't know what you want to call that, a friendship or association or a working relationship, but you know, when you get people like Ariel Sharon calling you on the phone, you're not just an ordinary person. You know, you got to realize Ariel Sharon doesn't just call anybody up on the telephone and talk to just anybody. And neither does Benjamin Netanyahu, and neither do other Israeli officials. Larry Silverstein has contacts, and people are always saying with the World Trade Center. You know, one of the most confusing issues about this World Trade Center is somebody put explosives in those towers, and people are thinking, well, why would the U.S. attack itself? Why would the Americans put explosives in those buildings, destroy their own buildings, kill their own firemen, make their own citizens sick with all of that demolition debris? Why would the Americans do this? But if you look at the attack, you'll see there aren't that many Americans involved. What they really are is are Zionists and Israelis. And Larry Silverstein, because of his connection to Israel, could have been asking the Israelis to send people over to install these explosives, and they may have even manufactured the explosives. They may have shipped them over from Israel. The Israelis may have been the ones who put them in, and then they went back to Israel when it's all over, and this is why you can't figure out who did it. They're not here in America. You know, the Americans are looking around America, trying to figure out, well, who bought the explosives? I don't see any records of anyone buying them. And they're looking around, who in the military or who in the CIA put them in? They can't find anybody. But look at what happened before and after the attack. All the Israelis that were picked up on visa violations or because they were just suspicious, like those five that were celebrating the attack. Do you remember those?
Yes, talk about those five Israelis that were celebrating the attack.
Well, there were five in a van. They were in a van in New Jersey across the river watching the attack, filming it, and celebrating. And someone saw them, probably because they were supposed to be seen, because it later turned out that they had Arab clothing in their van when they got caught. What apparently they were doing is they were dressed as Arabs. They were making it look like they were Arabs who were celebrating the attack. The trouble is that after the report came in about these Middle Eastern men, these five Middle Eastern men celebrating, they made the mistake of driving into Manhattan. You know, like a lot of criminals will do, you know, they like to go back and, you know, look at the scene and laugh at it. And anyway, as they're driving in, they got picked up because there was this report, you know, five Middle Eastern men in a van celebrating the attack. And so the police saw this van with these five guys in it. And, oh, well, let's check them out. They check them out. They've got Arab clothing in the car. They've got traces of explosives in their van. They've got box cutters. And so they were then arrested, and they weren't as citizens. They were Israeli citizens. And so they were put in jail. And they sat there for quite a while before somebody within the federal government said, send them back to Israel. And so they went back to Israel quietly. Nobody ever really investigated. But then they went on an Israeli television talk show. Three of the five did. And in this television talk show, you can see it on the internet, or you can go to IamTheWitness.com and watch it. We have the video also at IamTheWitness.com. You'll see that three of them were talking to the Israeli talk show host on television, and one of them said they were there to document the event. As they're trying to explain what they were doing there, why they were filming it. And their response is they were there to document it. And now you have to ask yourself, if they were there to document it, who sent them? Who paid for it? This is a sign somebody in Israel knew it was coming. They knew when it was coming. They knew exactly what was going to happen. And they said, here, go over there and document it. And document it for what? People don't figure this out. What this is if you look through history, you'll see this attack on the World Trade Center is one of many type of attacks like this, what they call false flag attacks, where take a look at 1946. In Jerusalem, there was a bombing at the King David Hotel. Some Arabs installed explosives in the hotel and blew it up and killed a bunch of people. But the British, at the time, this was not Israel. It was still Palestine. And the British were still there. The British troops were there. And the British caught the people that did it and found out they were Israeli. Oh, well, they weren't Israelis yet. They were what you'd call Zionists or Jews, pretending to be Arabs. It was the same type of a thing, but on a smaller scale. They put explosives in a building, pretended to be Arabs, pretended to be attacking British and other people, trying to make the British angry at the Arabs. And this is what the 9/11 attack was. It was the same thing as that bombing of the King David Hotel, but on a larger scale. It was some Israelis blowing up the buildings, making it look as if Arabs had attacked us. And then immediately you'll see that all the Zionists in the media, immediately after that attack, were blaming Arabs and trying to get Americans stirred up into a frenzy that we must go attack Afghanistan and Iraq and, you know, the whole Arab nations, really. That's what this attack was. It was a trick to make the Americans and the rest of the world angry at the Arabs. Then, you know, it's like what people do with dogs. You know, they'll hit them in the face with a bloody rag, and after the dog gets all excited, they'll let the chain go and say, "Go get him! Go get him!" And that's what the Americans were being used as, attack dogs, to go attack Arabs. To kill as many Arabs and destroy their nation, to destroy Iraq. We're not there to help Iraq. If you look at what's going on in Iraq, there is no helping them. It's bombing them. It's destroying their water supplies, their electric power plants. There's no attempt to fix it. The contractors are also being killed in Iraq, which is another thing you have to ask yourself. Why would Iraqis be attacking the contractors who are trying to turn on the water and electricity for them? Look at how many of these contractors, when I say contractors, I don't mean mercenaries. I mean the contractors who are sent over there by private companies to turn on the water and the electricity and get the buildings back together. They are being killed, and supposedly by Iraqis. And it doesn't make any sense. Why would Iraqis kill those kind of people? What you'll see is all the evidence points to the entire Iraq war is a farce. The attack on 9/11 was to make Americans angry at Arabs. The Iraq war is to destroy Iraq. It's not to help Iraq. It's not to give them a better government. It's to destroy it. And that's why the contractors that go in there to fix it are being attacked. They're being attacked by Israelis who are pretending to be Arabs.
So this situation is very explosive. Now, what about this Zim shipping company? It broke its lease to move out of the World Trade Center just 1 week before the attack. And what's the link with this Michael Chertoff and Benjamin Chertoff? What goes with that story, Eric?
Well, the Zim moving company, I can't remember when they actually got out. There was one group of them in the World Trade Center towers, and they left their building. They abandoned the World Trade Center. I can't remember how long before the attack, but there was another building they had in New Jersey across the river. And now, exactly what these people are doing, they're claiming to be nothing more than a moving company. You know, they'll help people move furniture or whatever they need to move. But think about this. Here are Israelis working in a moving company. This is a perfect cover for them to be shipping things like explosives or packages. They could get into the World Trade Center buildings on the grounds that they're just bringing in some furniture. It's a perfect way to hide.
Set up.
Yeah, it's a perfect way to hide a group of people who are hauling equipment around. And not only can they take things into the World Trade Center without arousing suspicion, but they can take things out if they want to steal things. Because you got to remember that they know these buildings are going to be blown up. So why not, the night before, start stealing whatever they want? So they could get away with it because people will say, well, what's that big truck doing? Well, it's a moving company. They're just moving some equipment or furniture. So people wouldn't think it's suspicious. Plus, they get to use the freight elevators. They're not even using the ordinary elevators for the people. So they could do this without too many people noticing, and the security people wouldn't really think anything strange. Nobody would think anything strange. And so they may have been bringing things out of the Trade Center also in preparation. Plus, if you look at what was going on before the attack, there was reports of power outages in the World Trade Center. There were reports of drilling noises and it looks like what they were doing is they were preparing for the attack, installing explosives, perhaps drilling some of the concrete or whatever, just to prepare it all for the attack. And the best people to do it would be people like moving company people, people that looked like they were workers. They would be the least likely to arouse suspicion. And then 100 to 200 of these Israelis were picked up, not just because they were moving company, but I mean on visa violations. They were, some of them were art students, some were moving, working for these moving companies. But 100 to 200 of them, of these young men, picked up and sent back to Israel very quietly. None of them ever interrogated. And then this brings
interesting that they never ended up in Guantanamo Bay.
Well, this is where you bring in Michael Chertoff and some of the other people. The police had arrested a lot of these people, and the police would have conducted an investigation, but somebody above the police sent them all back home. And there aren't too many people that have control over the police. There aren't many people that can go into a police station and tell somebody, get that guy out of jail, send him back to Israel. It's the federal government that can do this. And look at the American government. We have people like Michael Chertoff, who was in the FBI for a while. Now he's Homeland Security Director. His mother was one of the first Mossad agents. And his family, these are hardcore Zionists again. You have... And he's just one of them. He's one of our top government officials, and you know, basically he's a Zionist. Where are his real loyalties? Are they for America or are they for Israel? And you see, because of his authority in the federal government, he can get people released from jail. He has authority over the police. This is how these Israelis can get away with these crimes and then get quietly sent back to America. And then he's got a relative, some type of a cousin. I'm not sure if it's a first cousin or what, but a cousin, Benjamin Chertoff. He is now working at Popular Mechanics magazine. And, you know, it was some time before he was working there, Popular Mechanics started getting rid of some of their senior editors, and they bring Benjamin Chertoff in and use Popular Mechanics as a way to discredit the 9/11 conspiracy theories. And so this is another part, that very important part, is their control over the media. They could not get away with a crime this big if the media was investigating. We have investigative reporters such as the 60 Minutes crew, Mike Wallace and the 60 Minutes crew. We have 2020 at ABC. There's all sorts of people calling themselves investigative reporters, but not one of them has bothered to investigate any of these people. They don't investigate Michael Chertoff, Larry Silverstein, the five dancing Israelis, none of them. And look at who they are. You've got Benjamin Chertoff in Popular Mechanics. Mike Wallace, that's not his real name. He's actually a Jew. And the whole 60 Minutes crew is basically either Zionists or one of their blackmailed or bribed puppets. All of the media is controlled by them. They're buying up the media. They're buying it up and getting rid of anybody who isn't either a Zionist or one of their puppets. And this is why the media doesn't report any of this. People are looking at the media and thinking, well, maybe they just don't know what's going on. They do know. They are part of it. The media executives are part of this criminal network. They are not innocent. They are not simply making mistakes. They are part of the network. They are the criminals. They are part of the people that need to be arrested. And people like Mike Wallace of 60 Minutes, the people that own these companies, Sam Newhouse, you know, all those names, Sumner Redstone, they are part of the network. And it's because of that that they've been getting away with this. They've got people fooled into thinking that these are honest people, that 60 Minutes is an honest, unbiased news reporting agency. These are propaganda groups. And they are the part of the criminal network, and we cannot solve any of these problems until we deal with those people. They all have to be removed. They all have to be arrested. We've got to completely clean our media out from these people. They're getting control of that, the media, the banking system, the military, the government. They've got both political parties, especially the Democrats. They dominate the Democrats and the so-called liberals. This is another trick they're using with people right now. They're trying to shift all the blame for 9/11 onto George Bush or the Vatican. And by blaming it on George Bush, what that allows them to do is say, well, here's the solution. We'll elect Nancy Pelosi or Hillary Clinton. And in reality, these people just follow orders from the same group of Zionists.
These puppet masters.
Yes, and if you look at Nancy Pelosi, one of the people that's responsible for helping her get elected is another congressman, Rahm Emanuel. This is another one, just like Benjamin Chertoff, his father and grandfather are hardcore Zionists that helped Israel get established. There is a news report that Rahm Emanuel's father was one of the people who helped assassinate. He was part of the team that assassinated the Swedish government official in Palestine and some other people. These are Zionist murderers. They are Zionist terrorists. They're getting into the American government. They're pretending to be liberals and Democrats. In reality, their goal is to develop Israel to take over America, take over Canada, take over Europe. They're not here to help us. And that's why you'll see the liberals, after they got elected, a whole bunch of Democrats got elected in this last election, and they're campaigning on how we're going to stop the war. We don't believe in the war, they're telling everybody. And the war is still going on. They're not doing anything to stop it. And you see, this is more evidence that the war was not to help Iraq in the first place. It's to destroy the place.
Now, very important is the money that Larry Silverstein got in this the insurance scam. He was trying to collect two times. Let's get into that. And also, who were these insurance companies were doling out the dough to Larry Silverstein? Eric, let's get into what his claim was first. He wanted to do two separate claims.
On the World Trade Center, he had it insured for terrorist attacks, and that would have given him about $3 billion, I think. So what he was trying to do with the insurance company is say, well, two planes hit the towers in two different attacks, so therefore it should count as two terrorist attacks, and he should get two payouts. This is what he was trying to use as reasoning. That since two airplanes hit, it should count as two attacks, and he should get twice what he, you know, what everyone else would think. So he was asking for something like $7 billion, practically, for just the towers. And on Building 7, he was trying to get about $800 million. I can't remember exactly what he's finally gotten, but I know he got about half of what he wanted for Building 7. And just recently, this shows you just how sad the American people are. He got about half of what he wanted on Building 7, and he recently held a rally, or somebody arranged it. He was there speaking in New York City, demanding that the insurance company give him the full amount that he's asking for Building 7, and he has fooled some of the construction workers into thinking that he does deserve this money because it will provide jobs, it will allow him to rebuild the building. And so he's got the construction workers cheering him on, saying, yes, give Larry Silverstein the money. You know, they're cheering him on, helping him demand money for this attack on the grounds that it will give people jobs. I mean, this is shocking. This guy should be arrested, and instead he's got construction workers cheering him, demanding that the insurance companies pay everything he's asking for.
Now, the rubble was quickly shipped from the World Trade Center. Who do you think was shipping this out? Maybe the Zim shipping company as well?
Well, I don't know.
Who organized this, and what's the connection with the mafia?
Well, the destruction of the rubble was occurring because the city officials and the state officials and the whole federal government was allowing it. This shows you just how extreme this was, the corruption within our own government, because what they were doing was against the law, and the police knew it was against the law. They all know it's against the law. Whenever there's a crime scene, the police know that they have to seal it off and hold the evidence for investigation. And so their destruction of this evidence, they knew it was illegal, and there was even an article in a Fire Engineering magazine that in which the editor was saying he looked through all the laws trying to find if there was any exception to this. And he said there is no exception. They cannot legally destroy this. They're violating the law. So they all knew it was against the law. It's a sign that everybody, the mayor of New York City, the governors, the federal officials, the police, they all knew what they were doing was illegal, and they let it happen anyway. What they were doing is shipping it out, selling it to places like North Korea and China, and the rubble that they couldn't really sell, the smaller dust particles and pieces of no real value, they were just burying, taking to a dump and burying. And it was all illegal. I don't know exactly who was doing the shipping, whether the Zim company was involved, but it was basically just a destruction of evidence. And
this is a scene of crime.
Well,
now blaming it on the Arabs, and this particular fellow that's in Guantanamo, of all the timing, comes out now taking the blame. This is a crock. Why now?
Well, even if it wasn't a scene of crime, even if it was just an accident in which fire caused the towers to come down, even if it's an accident, the Fire Engineering magazine editor said, any building over five stories that falls down must be saved for inspection to figure out why it fell so that the architects know what they did wrong. It's a law in America. If any building, he says, above a certain size, like five stories, were to accidentally fall down or have any sort of problems, it must be inspected. They must have a report on what happened. And so even if it was not a crime scene, the destruction of that evidence was illegal. You see, it was illegal no matter how you look at it, whether it was a crime scene or whether it was just an accident. They knew they could not destroy that evidence. So that was deliberate, and there's only one reason to explain it. They did not want anyone to see closely what those steel beams looked like or what the dust particles looked like or what the computers looked like. They didn't want anyone to look closely because it would have shown you that they did not just fall down. They were blown up with explosives.
But the dust particles, wouldn't they come up with explosive compound?
Yes.
They're rather interesting.
Well, there was, in fact.
Americans have any speck of dust from the rubble from this 9/11? This is highly shocking.
Well, there are some analysis of it, in fact. What you'll find is that there was a Professor Cahill of Davis University who... He asked somebody, he gave them some containers and told them, get some air samples. He didn't even bother with the dust. He just went, he does atmospheric analyses. So he got some containers of the air days after the attack. It was days later. He just said, get some air samples from the area of the World Trade Center. And he analyzed it and said, there are microscopic particles of metal floating around in the air. And he says there is no way particles this small of metal can be floating in the air unless there are some extreme temperatures to produce them. Because you don't get, when a building falls down, the metal inside the building doesn't just turn into these microscopic particles on its own. You know, something has to create this, explosives, extreme temperatures. And so his report does two things. First of all, proves that there is something going on there, such as explosives, thermite, something was there to create extreme temperatures, to create these tiny little particles. And second, his report explains why so many people in that area are sick to this day and dying. And there are reports of 8 to 10 to 20,000, sometimes 20,000 people who are being monitored for health problems. Because breathing these tiny particles, they're so small, they were getting into people's lungs and then into their bloodstream and causing kidney problems, lung problems, liver problems. Some have already died, others are just suffering. They cause also lots of skin rashes. And so his report has proven this, but you see, how many people even know about his report? The only way you'd even know about it is if you'd have to go. I think Christopher Bolin is about the only person who's written about it. And you're only going to find this at iamthewitness.com. That's the only site that I think is posting this. There might be one or two others out there, but most people don't know about it because the media is ignoring these reports, you see. This again brings you back to the media. The only way they can get away with this crime is by controlling the news reports, preventing all of the investigative reporters from investigating.
Tell our listeners also your website, because you could get on your website and get a lot of the information as well. Tell our listeners what your site is.
The easiest of my sites to remember is just hugequestions.com, H-U-G-E, and then questions.com. And that'll give you, that's just one page where you can watch some videos, and it'll take you to other sites. But that's my site. And another thing you'll notice is almost all of these so-called 9/11 investigators, anti-war activists, the peace groups, they're all ignoring both my site, they're ignoring Christopher Bolin, they're ignoring the IamTheWitness.com site. This is another clue into who's doing this and what's going on and how extreme the control is of even the 9/11 groups. The 9/11 groups, people think, oh, they're trying to expose 9/11, they're trying to help us. And the anti-war groups, people think, oh, they're trying to help us stop the war. But in reality, none of them are trying to help. What they're trying to do is control. They're trying to manipulate. They're trying to make sure nobody does anything. And they're also identifying who is aware of what's going on, you see. Look at the anti-war groups. They're a really good example. They want to stop the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. But the reason for the war is 9/11. So you'd think the first thing they'd want to do is show people that 9/11 was a setup by Israel to get the war going, wouldn't you?
Exactly.
Well, they have no interest in exposing 9/11. If you ask the people in control of these anti-war groups or these peace groups, why don't you expose 9/11? They'll say, well, that's irrelevant. It's not our issue. We don't want to get into that. We want to stop the war. We don't want to expose 9/11. Well, 9/11 is the reason for the war. If you expose 9/11, that takes away the entire purpose of the war. You see, for a person who believes that the Arabs attacked us, the war makes sense to them because they feel that they're being attacked by Arabs. So in order to stop the war, you've got to explain to the people, the Arabs didn't attack us in the first place. But they won't do it. And if you look at who's in control of these groups, you'll find Jews all over the place again. Israelis, Jews, I mean, people can't even put this together. The Jews are all over the media. They're all over the 9/11 groups. They're all
Zionists,
over.
Zionists, you mean?
Well, yeah, the Zionist Jews, and then they have some Christian Zionists too. You'll get them too. What they are is, what they have in common is this support of Israel. But an enormous number of them are Jews. You'll see that they don't always show their support of Israel. You won't see them always as supporters of Israel. You'll see them as just American Jews. And sometimes you'll see them as posing as Christians or atheists, or in some cases some of them claim to have converted to Muslims. But it's an amazing number of them in the media, in 9/11, in the anti-war groups, the peace groups.
Well, I'm rather surprised where they get the funding from, and when I notice that, it's very sophisticated, the funding for these anti-war groups, and you're absolutely right. It's probably coming from the same crowd.
Well, they have a phenomenal amount of money. You see, if you look at the banking system, the Rothschilds, and they're supposedly having more money than any other group on the planet. You have the Oppenheimers, the Bronfmans. There are some extremely wealthy families out there, all supporters of this Israeli this fantasy of recreating Israel and this fantasy of, you know, helping the Jews take over Europe and America. You know, there's a lot of them out there with money, and the liberals. This is another thing about these so-called liberals and Democrats. There's the Simon family. They're billionaires. They claim to be Democrats. There's a lot of these people that are Zionist Jews with an enormous amount of money posing as Democrats and liberals. A lot of them made their money through crime and a lot of them, they help each other. A lot of them are in gambling, real
Murder
estate.
Murder, Inc. Murder, Inc., Meyer Lansky, and on and on.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's enormous, the connections between them all are just incredible. It's a big, big network. This Zionist network is gigantic. And you see, they're part of their reason they're so big is Israel is a base of operations for them now. Now that Israel is established, they can train people there, they can make plans. They don't have to worry about the police over there. They are the police, they are the military, they don't have to worry about anybody arresting them for their crimes. And so they're supposedly now like the biggest ecstasy producer, of the drug ecstasy. They're running a lot of internet gambling operations over there. They're running a lot of pornography and sex slaves. They're getting away with a lot of crime now. And that also brings them money. And that, in conjunction with their banking empire and their control over the media, I mean, they have a lot of money and they have a lot of control. And they're trying to dominate the internet also by putting out thousands and thousands of websites, of anti-war websites or 9/11 websites. And they're forming group after group after group. So that if you go on the internet to look for 9/11 information, chances are very good that you'll run into one of their sites rather than my site or Bolin's site. And so chances are good that you're going to get their propaganda.
Exactly. I noticed that Christopher Bolin and yourself probably have just the true nature of what happened in 9/11, and very few have it all. So as soon as I saw that Larry Silverstein, it's an insurance scam. These people don't care if they kill 3,000 or 3 million.
Well, yeah, the group was large. Apparently, some people did actually care. See, the killings, this is one of the other reasons why you realize this was not done by Arabs. 3,000 is actually a very small number when you consider what it could have been. If this had been a real attack by Arabs, those buildings would have been full of people. And if the buildings really did fall down from fire, I mean, there could have been tens of thousands of deaths. And at the Pentagon, too, where the plane hit the Pentagon, it hit the empty section. Hardly anybody died. So it was actually a small number of deaths, but you're right. A lot of these people really didn't care. But some people within the group apparently decided to be nice and let almost everybody live. That's why the towers, if you look at when the towers actually collapsed, it was after almost everybody got out of there, except for the people who were trapped above the fire zone and couldn't get out, you see.
So maybe that was not expected. Maybe that's the whole thing as well. But if it was in its full capacity, how many people do you think were notified beforehand to not show up that day?
Apparently a lot of people. In fact, just recently, Christopher Bolin was talking to one of the people who survived. He got out, Stanley Primnath. I forget how to pronounce that name. He worked in the Fuji Bank in the 81st floor, which is where the plane hit. And he was sitting in his office when the plane hit. And it came right on the same floor. Part of the plane went right on the floor that he was on. But he did manage to survive. And he made the remark that almost nobody showed up for work that morning. He was there with about 20 other people. And he said normally on his own floor, just that one floor alone, there's over 100. I think he said 120. The article is at IamTheWitness.com if someone wants to see it. But almost nobody at the Fuji Bank showed up. And there's reports of other people not showing up. There's reports out of the Middle East that the Israelis that worked in the building didn't show up. They got instant messages, don't bother coming to work today. So apparently a lot of people knew, don't go into work that day. If the Arabs attacked us, how would Japanese bank officials know about it? It's all a sign that this is a bigger crime than you realize. And why would the Fuji bank officials have been notified?
All of these things are coming out.
Yeah, and it's interesting that it's a bank, too. A bank. You remember, I mentioned the Rothschilds and their banking empire. What is the Fuji Bank? What's the connection? We're not sure. No one can quite figure this out. But you see, Japan also has a problem with organized crime. And the banking system, maybe there's something going on with the Japanese organized crime gangs, and maybe they're working in some respects with the Zionist crime gangs. You see, it's possible that some of these gangs work together. Because you mentioned Meyer Lansky. You'll see if you look at him, he sometimes worked with some Italian gangsters. And it's possible that this same Zionist gang today is working with some of the Japanese gangsters. And that may have been
interwoven somehow.
Well, that they might work together sometimes, even though they don't. They may not be one big happy family, but they may work together sometimes on some crimes. You'll see that with Meyer Lansky. He would sometimes work with some of the Italians. They weren't necessarily friends, but, you know, they might occasionally work together to help each other. And that might have been what was going on 9/11. And this would explain why Japan doesn't do anything. You know, why is Japan so quiet about 9/11? Why is Canada so quiet? Why is Europe quiet? Why is no nation anywhere talking? And you'll see that Japan even said right after the attack, they were going to investigate the stock market transactions. Do you remember hearing about this?
Exactly. Let's get into that issue, the short selling of the put options and the American Airlines and United Airlines. Where's all the evidence now being suppressed, and why hasn't the Securities Exchange Commission in Washington dealt with who the people were that made the money on these put options? Let's get into that, Eric.
Well, a couple of days before the attack, there were some very mysterious put options, you know, people gambling on certain stocks dropping in price, United Airlines and Morgan Stanley or whatever that company, that investment company that's in the World Trade Center. There's a couple of very unusual transactions and on a large scale, which is a sign that somebody knew something was going to happen. And then after the attack, these people made a lot of money. So then you realize, well, they had knowledge of this attack coming. This explains it. And so immediately after the attack, the Securities and Exchange Commission in America said they're going to investigate. And so did the same transactions were going on in Europe and Japan. And Europe and Japan both said they were going to investigate also. And yet every one of these transactions, all of their investigations were stopped. There has never been an investigation. Every one of them has been blocked. And, you know, the people who blame this 9/11 attack on George Bush or the Vatican have to explain, how did George Bush or the Vatican stop the Japanese from investigating? How did they stop all the European countries from investigating? How did they stop America? This is not being stopped by the Vatican or George Bush. George Bush doesn't have control over Japan. And who does? It's the only way you can explain Japan is it's that Japanese gang, and they're working with the Zionist gang. There's no other way. How do you explain this? There's corruption in Japan, and somehow their corrupt officials are being influenced by the same Zionist gang that's controlling America and Europe. And they have so much control over the world that they can block investigations all over the place. And they control the media everywhere also. They're controlling it to some extent in Japan. They don't have as much control over the Japanese media, but they do have control over the Japanese media. In fact, a Japanese film crew put a television show, they made a television show to expose 9/11. I think it was 2004, I forget. They sent a crew through America, and I think a little of Canada, to interview some of us. And I was the last person on their trip, and they interviewed me about some of the attack, and they went back home, you know, gave the video to the studio, and then when it went on TV, my face had been blocked out, my information had been blocked out, they wouldn't let anybody know about my book or video. Somebody in the crew, they couldn't completely suppress this show, but what they did was they blocked out my name and face and made it impossible to identify who I was. So they have some control over the Japanese media, but it's not as complete as it is over America, Canada, and Europe.
This is absolutely shocking. So you were interviewed, and here it is. They're able to erase you out in one fell swoop.
Well, yeah,
this
my face.
Shocking.
They blocked my face, my name. They wouldn't show my book or anything. So I was just a nameless, faceless person, just, you know, making a few remarks. They couldn't completely get me out.
On the morning, Eric, on the morning of July 22nd, was it 1946? Again, we have the scenario where 15 to 20 of these so-called Ergun terrorists, but they were dressed as Arabs. That's the king, the key issue here. They entered what you said, the King David Hotel in Jerusalem, and they unloaded 225 kilograms of explosive hidden in milk churns. Here were the milkmen coming in with the big kabang. So this is highly important because this is the same type of scenario that we have at the 9/11, dressed as Arabs always. So they're always trying to blame the Arab nation rather than themselves. What a conniving bit of mockery to the Arab people. And this is the latest when we have this Sheikh Mohammed here, the one that's in the mainstream media being played up to a T. He's now in Guantanamo Bay, and he said he's the mastermind behind 9/11. How many times and how many years have they been twisting his arm? Or maybe a lot of those hairs that he's got on the back of his shoulders, front of his hairs. They always show this hairy-looking picture of him. Do you think this is the fellow that actually is the mastermind, or is this another double?
Well, actually, Christopher Bolin was just putting up an article that if you look at when this Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was arrested, the reports show that he was arrested with somebody they're referring to as mentally feeble, somebody with this name of Ahmed Abdul Qadas or something. So anyway, think about this. He's arrested at the same time this mentally feeble guy is arrested, and then the initial reports, there were some saying that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was killed in this raid.
That's right.
And so what do we have now? Take a look at this person now who's confessing to all this. He can't write English. He's not very good with English. And yet if you look at this, the other guy, the Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, he was going to a university in America, in North Carolina. He was supposedly fluent in Arabic, English, and Urdu. See, you have you got a problem here. The guy who's confessing to all this can barely write English, yet the other guy was going to American universities and, you know, getting a degree in mechanical engineering.
So what it may be
is that they found this mentally retarded man who looks enough like him that they just are pretending, well, here's the guy and he's confessing to everything. And you'll see this once again fits the pattern of how they find mentally feeble people who they use as patsies. This is a
pattern of patsies.
Yes, because you'll see this with so many of them. Tim McVeigh he didn't seem to be quite smart enough to realize that he was being used in the Oklahoma City bombing. Lee Harvey Oswald didn't seem to quite get it. The snipers that were supposedly running through Washington, D.C. a couple years ago, they seem to have been also mentally ill people that were just set up to take the blame for the snipers. It's a pattern you'll see over and over. They look for people who can't think very well, and then they set them up to take the responsibility for the crime. And then everybody thinks, oh, the crime has been solved. We found the person responsible. And the person responsible is really the Israelis. Except that they now, you know, the Americans have been duped into thinking, oh, here's the man, he did it, and he's too mentally feeble to realize what's going on and defend himself. And it's the same with that other guy that they just put through a court trial in, what was it, Chicago or something, where he was supposedly one of the terrorists for 9/11. Remember that guy?
Yes.
And if you look at his behavior, again, he's displaying all sorts of symptoms of somebody whose mind isn't functioning properly.
This was, a fellow that was arrested in Chicago, but was in Toronto. Is that the one?
Yeah, he was arrested just before the attack, and they say he was the 20th hijacker. He was supposed to be part of the group, but they didn't. He never made it. They arrested him beforehand. Before the attack, and he But he was another that seems to be mentally ill. They look for this. And not only do they look for it for patsies, but if you listen to Kay Griggs, she's the wife of a Marine Corps colonel. She says the Zionists are also doing this for looking for military leaders, news reporters, politicians. They look for people with problems. And they look for people who can't think too well, or they're suffering from low self-esteem, or they've got a drug problem or gambling problem. They look for people with problems because those are the people that they can control and manipulate and blackmail. And they'll give them promotions in the military, she says. And see, then it allows them to control the military. By promoting these people with mental problems, they can then influence them once they get into a position. And you'll see this all over the politics. Look at the leadership of America, Canada, Europe. Look at these people. Are they your idea of intelligent, happy, functioning people? You know, seriously, look at them. This is not an insult. These people have problems. That's why they get the funding. That's why they get promotion by the media. And Barack Obama is currently being held up by the media as a potential presidential candidate. And he just pops out of nowhere, gets tremendous publicity by Zionists in the media. And you have to ask yourself, why him? And if you look at him, he's not really opposing the war. He doesn't expose 9/11. He won't talk about any Zionist crime or even bring up the issue of Zionism. He's one of their patsies or puppets or whatever you want to call them. You see this pattern over and over. They use other people for their dirty work. And they stay behind the scenes so that if you expose one of them, for example, if you catch Barack Obama lying, people think, oh, well, it's Barack Obama. You don't look behind him and realize, well, who's the one encouraging all these lies? Who's the one funding him? Who's the one promoting him? You see how they stay behind the scenes and they fool people into looking at the wrong people? And they're doing that with... They're doing that with Bush, too.
Time and time again, and people don't seem to get the gist of it because they control the media.
That's right.
That's the main thing.
By controlling the media, they control how most people view the world. You see, and the media, if you want an example of how incredible the media is as far as shaping people's opinions, all you have to do is ask people about historical events. Everything they know comes from a couple textbooks or... In most cases, not even the textbooks, but the television, the movies, and some newspaper and magazine reports. For example, the Apollo moon landing. Almost everybody thinks people landed on the moon. And if you look closely into it, you realize there is no way people today could get to the moon. We don't have the technology. It was all faked with a lousy television camera. And here again is a pattern you'll see over and over. Look at the videos of Osama when he confesses to things, or the videos of Apollo moon landing, the pictures that the so-called terrorists are providing on their websites, they're all extremely low quality. And the reason is they're all fake. They can't provide high quality photos of any of this stuff. There's reports that Osama died in 2002, early 2002, or late 2001. So all of these videos of Osama are low quality because they have to be. They can't show you a good picture of him, or you'll realize that's not really him. And it's the same with the Apollo pictures. You can't...
You can almost see the pancake Hollywood makeup on that Osama bin Laden that they had in those last videos, hitting all the front pages, and people buy this
right, well,
a fakery, but it's done with low budgets here. In a sophisticated manner, you can see it. It's almost like digging into the populace, saying you're so dumbed down, you don't even understand it when it's right blatantly in your face.
That's right, but it's not a low-budget operation. They are making it look low-budget because they're trying to ruin the quality. They deliberately ruin the video quality so you can't take a good look. And even those beheading videos, you'll see the same thing. Every single time that the person is about to be beheaded, the camera does this strange movement as if he's just moving the camera around wildly. But and then after that then the head is off. You never actually see it happen. You never see any good pictures of who what the face looks like. You don't even know how much of that is real. You know, some of the beheading videos could have been faked. Or they could be somebody, or they could be somebody else. Well, you've got that problem too, but you also have the possibility that they're not who they claim to be, that it's all fake, or it's actually a dead body to begin with. I mean, you see, there's so much wrong here. You have to ask yourself, if the terrorists were capable of doing all this, how come they can't even afford even a home quality video camera does better than what they're providing? So it's all a sign that this is all set up to fool us. And that's how they've been getting away with this. It's through deception, by setting up other people. And it's sort of like what people did when they were little kids in grade school for fun. You know, as you're standing in line for lunch or something, somebody might reach around the person in front of them and poke the guy in front, and then quickly move his hand back, and then the guy thinks the person directly behind him poked him, rather than the guy two people behind. You know, remember, did you do that when you were in school? Did you ever see someone do that?
Not that I remember.
Well,
but
when I was in school, some of the kids would do that. They would, you know, they'd reach around somebody, poke the guy in front, and then the guy in front would think the guy behind them did it. And they'd all laugh because the guy would think the wrong person did it. That's what the Israelis are doing. They're setting off a bomb, and then quickly you're hiding in the bushes, and then you look around and you see an Arab. And you think, oh, the Arab just set the bomb off. Well, it wasn't the Arab. It was the Israelis. And nobody is catching this, even time after time. And even when they get caught, like they did in the King David Hotel, it doesn't seem to have any effect on people. Part of the reason is that most people don't even know what the King David Hotel bombing is. It's not in the history books. You don't see much about it. School children are not taught.
That's a very interesting book to write about, the pattern of deception through patsies. No one's done it yet, but to show the repeat performance. This is highly significant because we've been buying it year after year, decade after decade, century probably after century, because we're so dumbed down. Now, what I was going to ask about is the main thing is with the World Trade Centers, they collapsed because this was a very sophisticated plot to not only collect insurance, biggest scam ever, but this has now escalated into this main takeover. They wanted Iraq. Now they want Iran. Do you think it's going to get into that hot spot that this was the key issue right now to again blame this fellow, this dumbed-down fellow by the name of Hamid here, Sheikh Mohammed, as perpetrating the 9/11, all for the takeover of these countries and the monetary system. Let's get into the monetary system. Is this the key issue of what they want in the fact of overtaking not only the resources of the country, but the monetary system? So this patsy, this Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, now coming forth before the world, probably is a very opportune time. Something is in the works. What do you think about the timing, Eric?
Well, I think they're trying to bring this person out in order to settle this whole 9/11 debate, because it's growing around the internet that, you know, people are wising up to this, but there are still millions of people that can't see through the deception, and so this is going to help settle the issue for them. They will think, well, this explains 9/11, but as far as what their ultimate goal is, their ultimate goal seems to be just total takeover of the entire planet. They're not just trying to destroy Iraq or Iran, because remember, go back in history, go back to the world wars. They seem to have been the ones instigating and controlling both of the world wars. World War One was just like the King David Hotel bombing. It was just like 9/11, where they set up the assassination of somebody, and then all the nations go to war, and nobody can even explain why they're going to war. You know, if you look in history books at why World War One got started, nobody can explain it.
They might plot and plan to kick off here, I was going to say, to kill off the Prince Harry, because he's going into Iraq. Something is in the works here that would make a total outcry around the world. And I feel something is imminent quite soon, and the timing might be for April the 2nd, 2007. Why I think that is it's full moon day, but it's also the supposed crucifixion of Christ Day, and it's over the time of the Passover. I think it's timing, and this is why I think this stupid story of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed surfaced now. What do you think, Eric?
Well, it's possible, but see, I think they're running into trouble getting their war with Iran going. I think the U.S. military is resisting this. A lot of the military may not know what's going on, but I think they're starting to sense that there's something wrong with that Iraq war. And a lot of the people that are volunteering for the U.S. military are only doing it because they want a job, or because they're trying to get out of jail, or because their parents threw them out of the house. They're not trying. They don't want to fight. They don't want to kill Arabs. And if you look at the reports coming out of Iraq, you don't really see any war anywhere. The U.S. military is just sitting in their barracks. And the only deaths you get are when these mysterious bombs go off. And all of the evidence suggests that these mysterious bombs are coming from Israel. And the reason they're setting the bombs off is to keep the illusion alive that there is a war. Because if you take those mysterious bombs out, there's nothing, there's no war, there's no fighting. The Iraqi people are not interested in fighting. The American soldiers are not interested in fighting. If you take away the mysterious bombs and those mysterious snipers, there's nothing. And I think what's happening is that the U.S., the troops, most of them, there's a few that, you know, are still trying to kill Arabs. They think the Arabs attacked us on 9/11, but I think most of them would rather just watch television and play video games. And I think this is the reason they're having trouble getting a war with Iran going. They don't want to. I think they've been had. Well, I think they're running into trouble that the Americans, the one thing you can count on with Americans is that they will do nothing if given the opportunity. They'll watch TV and play games. And it's not like in World War One. You see, in World War One, people were ignorant and they had total control of the media. There was no internet. There were, you know, phones. There weren't even that many telephones back then. There was not much
communication has picked up, so people are sort of getting wise to it. But lackadaisical with the Americans. What's with them that they haven't picked up and done?
Well, the Americans have always been lazy. If you look at the country, it's already one third African slaves and the modern replacement, the Mexican. They don't want to work. Americans don't want to work. They never have. If you look at American history, they've never really wanted to. Most of them. But the difference between today and World War One is in World War One, when they shot that person, I think it was the Austrian leader.
King Leopold.
Yeah, when that was shot, you know, then all they have to do is send news reports out. Oh, we're being attacked. We've got to defend the country. The news reports go out. Everybody believes it. There weren't many telephones back then. They didn't have the television. They didn't have DVDs. People weren't burning their own DVDs and exposing it. People didn't know anything. They were just being told, oh, we're being attacked, let's go to war. And so they would all rush off to war and fight with one another. And nobody ever noticed what was going on during World War One, which was the British troops were being sent down to Palestine. And nobody ever asked, what are they going to Palestine for? If somebody in Austria gets shot, what's the connection? You see, back then there wasn't a telephone. There wasn't any of this communication. Nobody was asking, what are they doing in Palestine? Who sent them down there? What's their role down there? Well, what their role was the Zionists tricked everybody in Europe into getting into this war, and then they tricked the British into going down to Palestine and chasing the Turks out of the area and getting control of Palestine so that they could start developing it as Israel. But you see, today, they couldn't do that today. If they tried it today, immediately, people would be saying, what are we going to Palestine for if this guy in Austria is shot? They'd be all over the internet. There'd be people calling each other on the telephone. People would be burning DVDs. And you see, they can't do it. The technology of today is taking away their control over us. They had almost total control of the media back then. They have almost none today. They have control of the television and other things, but they don't have control anymore. We can burn DVDs for almost nothing, almost no cost. We can print books at almost no cost. We can send email messages for almost nothing. So we can go behind their backs and immediately expose them. And I think they're running into this problem. They had no way of anticipating this, you know, decades ago. And it's going to bring them down is what it looks like.
So it looks like right now everything is disseminated right on the internet. When people get wise to a story, they can quickly perceive something's amiss and then start emailing each other and then work out what's gone amiss.
It's not just the internet. It's also telephones and it's also DVDs and books. You see, like my book, it's a color book. My book was color pages. To do that in 1960 would have required amazing amount of handwork. You know, cutting photos up, pasting them on pages, tremendous amount of work. To go back even farther in World War I and create a color book, you know how hard that would have been? Today, you can do it on a computer. You don't do anything. You do it all on a computer, and then you can send the files, PDF files, to the printer and have it printed. It's not just the internet. It's technology. It's the computer. It's the telephone system. There's too much. Even without the internet, they're going to be exposed because of DVDs, because of the telephone system, because of the computers. So even if they shut the internet down, it won't stop them. Because we could even go back to the old-fashioned bulletin board system of the 1980s, where instead of the internet, you just dial the phone and talk to somebody's computer directly and pass information that way. The technology is going to expose them, and there's no way they can stop it.
So the only way they would do is close down the entire technology and do a total blackout. That's maybe what they're gaming for. But will they go that far? Because the world doesn't work without the slave, the slave race keeping the coffers of the banks going. So what do you think is their thought plan from it? Do they really want to depopulate the planet?
Well,
the amount? What do you think their end game is?
Well, I don't know what I think their final goal is to get control of the planet, but what I think they're starting to realize is they can't do it anymore. It's too late. The technology, there's no way they can shut down technology. You can't get rid of it. You can't stop it. They're too small of a group, and the other countries are just not going to allow something like that. You can't just shut down the phone system. You can't tell people to put away your computers. They would have to. How are you going to think about it? How can a small group of people do this around the world? They could certainly do it to a few nations. They could certainly cause tremendous chaos. They're doing it in Iraq right now. They already destroyed Yugoslavia into Serbia and Bosnia and. You can do it to a certain number of nations, but what about the other countries? You see, they've got this problem that they are in Europe and America. Those are their primary nations, and they're destroying America right now, inadvertently a little bit, it seems. But once America goes, see, look at America's manufacturing. It's already disappearing. The new generation of American students have almost no skills and almost no desire to do anything. Employers all over the country can see this. They have trouble finding engineers, carpenters, technicians. America is disintegrating, and they've got a big problem that once America starts to really crumble, Israel's biggest supporter is gone. And without America, where is Israel? And without America, Europe is free. Germany is free. There's no one standing over Europe. You see, right now, Germany is still under America's thumb, and America is under Zionist pressure. So through America, the Zionists are keeping the Germans subdued, stopping them from exposing the Holocaust hoax, for example, stopping them from talking about World War I and World War II, stopping them from talking about Zionism. And they're also stopping the British and the other nations. But without America, who's going to stop them? They are then free to do what they want and talk about what they want. And so I think they're realizing they're in big trouble. They're getting exposed around the world. Everybody's wising up to Zionism. They're trying to get a bank. Right now the Rothschilds are setting up banks in China. They're trying to get in there. They're also trying to bribe them with, you know, here's technology from America. Look, we're your best friends. Israel has been doing this for years, especially with the Democrats under Clinton. They were giving American technology to China. And this is how you, this is what, another of their techniques. They'll give you things and make you think, oh, they're our friends because look at all what they're doing for us. And they're trying to get the Chinese to let the Israelis and the Zionists get in there and get into their banking system and get into their politics and start influencing the nation. But I don't think they can do it now. I think that everybody around the world is getting wise to this.
Including the Russian Premier Vladimir Putin. He kicked them out big time. And he set up a new KGB system under a new name. But he's given them the old heave-ho. And that came out with the fiasco there regarding the company called Yukos. Do you remember that?
Yeah, it's hard to know exactly what they're doing, but you're right. Some of them, it's possible that he's trying to stop them. It's entirely possible that, but he may be running into trouble too, because they're all over Russia. They were supposedly behind the communist movement. They were supposedly, you know, their homeland is supposedly that area around the Caspian and Black Sea. So these people that we call Jews today, that is, most of them supposedly came from that area. They're not the original Jews of Palestine. Did you hear about that?
Yes, I did. And that's what they discern is the difference, or as David Icke discerns, the difference between the Palestinian, and then they call them that Black Sea area, that whole Caspian area that they've started from, originated from, and there's a different name to them as well.
The Ashkenazi Jews in the, yeah.
That's it. You've got it. So that's highly important to bring out, because these are the controllers of the world. They've mass manipulated the thought patterns of all of the aristocracy, and once they put that money system in the go and had all these wars, they bankrupted all the countries, including France. Take a look. England had to pay off the Second World War, and now they're wanting to start a Third World War. This is interesting. Why they have this compounded interest, and who funds it, and who is actually backing both sides. It's very important that people discern what's going on regarding them, and it's all to do with the 13 banking corporate families, I see, Rothschild being the head. So I also think that there's something going on in the fact that all of a sudden you're finding the body or the bones of Jesus of Nazareth, get that, of all times right now. So something is in the works. What do you make of their agenda here? Do you think it's all just fakery, propaganda that's been ongoing and people buy it?
Well, yeah, the Jesus bones, they claimed that were sitting around in a museum for a couple decades, and then they just decide to bring them out now. I'm sure that's just to create more chaos and confusion. That's what this is one of their techniques to keep people from wising up and to keep them from working together. They try to constantly create fights. It's like, imagine yourself around a pack of wild dogs, you know, and they're hungry and they're willing to eat you, but you have a supply of raw meat. What you would do is every once in a while throw a piece of meat out. Let them go after the meat to throw them away from you, right? You'll see the Zionists do the same thing. To keep people away from them, they keep throwing something out that gets everybody fighting or confused. For example, when Americans have presidential elections, every time you'll see them throw out this abortion issue. And that causes the Republicans to all fight with each other over abortion. And they'll bring up the issue of cutting Social Security and welfare. And that gets all the Democrats fighting with each other. And meanwhile, nobody notices the political candidates are just Zionist puppets. They're so busy fighting over abortion and Social Security, they don't even notice what's going on. And then they do it again the next election and the next election. It's like throwing out something, you know, a piece of raw meat for the wild dogs. And they go after it. And that may be what this Jesus bones are. And here, just, you know, throw it out there. Let the Christians all fight with each other and argue with each other. Meanwhile, nobody notices the war is still going on in Iraq. We're wasting tremendous amounts of money. Our country's falling apart. The trains don't work. The economy's a mess. Most people's lives are pathetic. Their best friends are television sets and animals and money. Look at the country. Look at the world. It's a disaster. And so what do? They tell us, oh, here's, we found Jesus' bones. They've been sitting in our museum for 20 years. You can have them now. It looks like all they did is bring this out just to cause trouble. And then they probably faked it. It's probably not even anything close to Jesus' bones.
Exactly. So this bit of fakery showed up at the Royal Ontario Museum here in Toronto a while ago, and that was made into a fakery. So I perceive this new onslaught, another bit of fakery, but Hollywood is buying it up big time.
Well,
they even had some sort of documentary done with the fellow who made the movie Titanic.
Yeah, but Hollywood is them. Hollywood isn't buying it up. Hollywood is them. Hollywood is this Zionist crowd. And people like Steven Spielberg, he even made this statement that he will die for Israel. Israel is what they want. Israel and control of the world. And so, think about this now. He's an American, supposedly, and yet he's willing to die for Israel? He's a Hollywood producer, and if you'll see, there are some others that have even written articles. There was one Hollywood person, he was Jewish, and he made a remark. Yeah, Jews control Hollywood, so what? They boast about it. They are in control. They dominate. They decide who gets to be an actor, who gets to be a famous musician. They have control of it. And they decide what movies go out and which ones don't. They decide what the plots are going to be. They put this stuff out on their own. They're not falling for the deception. They are the deception. They are part of the criminal network. This is what people don't realize. They are the criminals. They are this Zionist network. That's why those World Trade Center buildings could get blown up right in front of people's faces. They are the media. The media helped it. The media, the Hollywood people, Steven Spielberg, all of these people that are worshipped in America, they are the criminals.
That keep on doing that false propaganda, and the Hollywood scene is all part of it. Interesting, I noticed that when Marlon Brando came on the Larry King show, he had to bring that up about who owns Hollywood, and I had to laugh when he knocked the glasses off old Larry and jested about that, because that was really interesting. He couldn't punch him in the nose, but he could knock his glasses off and jest. Next day, what happens? All of Hollywood is in an uproar yelling to Brando, you'll never work Brando in Hollywood again, that you brought up that the Hollywood cabal is running the show. So that was interesting that that came out. And then also Mel Gibson, if you say anything against them, they really go to town on you. What do you think of this constant thoughts and shenanigans that they keep on perpetrating, Eric?
Well, that is another thing they'll do. You know,
criticize them.
Or expose them, or even just talking about them. All you have to do is something they don't like and you're attacked. There was one correspondent, Diane Sawyer, I think it was. She interviewed the Iranian president, Ahmadinejad, whatever his name.
That's right. That's right.
And she was then attacked by some of the Jewish radio people, like the guy that calls himself Michael Savage. It's not his real name, but he goes by Michael Savage. And he's just viciously attacking her simply because she talked to him as if he was a human being. You see, you don't even have to criticize Israel or criticize Zionism to get them attacking you. And so what it shows you is that the only people who are going to make it in television, Hollywood, it's their people, the people they've approved of. You've got to be, you know, one of them or one of their puppets. And if you're not, then you're driven out. And look at the mysterious deaths. There are a lot of mysterious deaths that could be the people that just refused to go along. There was that one. You see this with some of the musicians. You'll see it with actors, mysterious deaths going on. They could be the ones that just don't refuse to play along with them.
That's what I think. Now, interesting that this has been so long seated, but I noticed something. I think it was approximately a month ago. There was a scientist, and he came forth on the Coast to Coast show with Ian Punnett. I was all ears to listen to this because it was about the Larry Silverstein insurance scam. So I tuned in. Next thing I know, when the show is right in the heat of things, they knock it off purposely. No talking about it afterwards. So this is what they do, sabotage. Any type of information getting out there. Wonder if we could get our show going and see if they're going to knock it right off the internet.
Well,
what do you think, Eric? Do you think the American people might hear the show that we're talking about right now?
Well, they will be available to them. But in the case of the Art Bell show and that Coast to Coast, it depends on what they were talking about. They sometimes seem to do that just to give themselves credibility. Because, I think some people are even wising up to Art Bell. Art Bell will defend the official story on everything. And the whole Coast to Coast radio show is like that. They don't really tell the truth. And one way they can give themselves credibility is by cutting off something right in the middle and then saying, oh, wow, it must have been those feds. But you see, if somebody's going to cut you off, it won't be the Americans, it won't be the Canadians, it'll be the Zionists. So unless he was starting to really expose them, then it would not be, it would be a fake, you see?
Exactly.
You have to look at who it was that, you always have to realize they're tricking people constantly. So when somebody on the Coast to Coast radio show, which is constantly lying to people, when they say they just got cut off, what you have to consider is it was another trick to fool you into thinking, oh, this guy must be telling the truth because he just got cut off. Well, you know, they never tell the truth on Coast to Coast anyway, so you got to be careful with them.
Do you think right now there might be a major plot, what I see really on the Coast to Coast, that they're bringing this alien agenda on? People are buying it hook, line, and sinker. A major asteroid's going to hit the world. We're going to have this great big flying saucer be hovering right over Washington, and we've got to now take that pill and go into the flying saucer to go into nether world. Maybe it's all a plot now for people to downsize, and they buy it with this religious fiasco that they keep on harping about. And this is why I see some of these alternate networks, you have to discern which is true.
Well,
when I saw yours and Christopher's, I thought, these two fellows are right on the ball. They see the fakery and they can discern between it. So, Eric, what do you think about the agenda with Coast to Coast and some of these alternative media?
Well, I think the alien thing is people have a hard time believing this too, but I think what they've been trying for decades, a dream of theirs, it's only a dream, they can't do it yet, but I think the dream they've had for decades is to simulate aliens, to pretend that they are aliens, and then they could land on the planet. They have two things, there's two choices if they can be aliens. One is they could fake an attack by aliens, and then say, oh, we gotta unite to fight back at these aliens and defend ourselves. Or they could come down as nice aliens and say, look, you humans are really messing up the world. We'll help you. Just follow our advice. And I think that's what they've been trying to do with, and using NASA's budget and the Space Wars, the Star Wars budget. I think they've been trying to create something that will look realistic, like an alien spacecraft, and Hollywood is helping out by getting the idea in people's minds that they're already here on the planet, they're watching us. So I think what they're trying to do is create an alien spacecraft, an alien-looking people, and then take over the world that way.
Okay, Eric, now I have a very important question for you. Do you think the CIA, the FBI, and the Mossad is one of the same organizations? Do you think America is actually being run by Israel right now as we speak? Because I smell a rat when I see Ehud Olmert, Shimon Peres, meeting with Clinton, and then meeting with Bush. What do you make of this, Eric?
Well, what's interesting is if you look back at how the CIA was created and the FBI, it's possible that the Zionists created the organizations or were there in the beginning. And so they didn't even have to infiltrate it. They were there from the beginning to help shape it. Because they do seem to be following their control. And a good example is the FBI. The FBI investigated the 9/11 attack, Oklahoma City, all sorts of attacks. The FBI was even in Bali, Indonesia. Remember that bomb in October of 2002?
Yeah.
Even the people in Indonesia, if you look at their news reports, are asking, what is the FBI doing here with taking our evidence? It's what are they over in our country doing? And what you'll see the FBI doing time after time after time is rushing to every terrorist attack. And in some cases, they're already there. They're on the scene. Like at the Pentagon, they were immediately picking up security camera videos. Right after whatever hit the Pentagon crashed into it, they were there to pick up.
And FEMA as well at the 9/11 World Trade Center scene.
Right.
They were there the night before.
Well, right. And see, these are the federal agencies. And what it looks like is these agencies are under complete control of Israel. They are at every major Zionist false flag attack. And they're there to clean up the mess, to frighten witnesses, to identify the witnesses, to confiscate evidence. The evidence suggests that these are agencies of Israel. And and it may not be that they were infiltrated. It may be that Zionists within the American government created them. And so this is what, is about the only way you can explain something like the FBI, who never solves anything. The only people the FBI ever arrests are what appear to be just ordinary people that are not part of the crime network. You know, they're just occasionally arrest a bank robber or something. But they don't go after the real crimes. And for years under J. Edgar Hoover, they were pretending there was no such thing as organized crime. And so it's a possibility that they were there to create these organizations. And if you look at America, even before the 9/11 attack, you don't even have to go back very far. How many Americans even suspected Israelis of anything? How many knew what a Zionist was? How many would have suspected a Jew of being a Zionist? How many would have suspected the Rothschilds or one of their friends? The Rothschilds supposedly financed the Rockefellers, for example. Who suspected the Rockefellers of being involved with them? So decades ago, they had free rein. You know, they could do anything they wanted. Nobody suspected them. There were reports of Israelis even wandering around the Pentagon. Nobody really thought anything strange about that. Today it's a little different that people are a little more aware of what's going on, but before they could do anything, they were treated by the media as Israel is America's only and best friend in the entire Middle East. That's what the media tells us over and over. They keep telling us this, that they're our best friends. And this comes from the media again. It comes from the Zionists. And it's a lie. Israel's not our friend. Israel is using us. They're using us the same way that every once in a while you hear of boys discovering there's a retarded girl in their neighborhood and they trick her into letting them have sex with her. That is what's going on with America and Israel. That's the relationship we have. The Israelis are treating us as a retarded girl and they're just raping us. And the Americans think, oh, they're in love with us. They're our best friends. Here we are giving billions of dollars a year to them. We're giving billions to Egypt to prevent Egypt from fighting with them. We're spending billions on a war to kill Iraqis and destroy Iraq. And this has been going on for decades. That's not our friend. This is an abusive relationship. And then you go back farther, you see they did the same thing with Europe.
something really serious when the American populace is watching football and that all of their hard-earned dollar is being raped, pillaged, and plundered by none other than Israel, on and on.
Yeah, and people, Americans will complain about taxes and all the rest of this, but whose fault is it? I mean, all they have to do is get rid of this Zionist cancer. I mean, they're ransacking the nation. And it's more than just Israel. If you look at the crimes they're committing, just take a look at what's going on with the stock market, all the manipulations, the banking, the savings and loan scandals. They're all over this. They're running all sorts of crimes. It's not just, we're paying more than just military aid and economic aid to Israel. They're cheating us in very big scams. There's a report that Enron is just the tip of the iceberg. What was going on with Enron? There's worse crimes supposedly going on in the entire financial markets.
So, and it's happening every single day. And something happened just a few weeks ago, and this week they're talking about the crash of the market in real estate will happen. So it's onward and upward for these fellows. Probably that's their main agenda here, to crash the American populace and then foreclose on all of their real estate, sort of like taking the carpet right under beneath the Americans. And the Americans are their worst enemy themselves because they haven't woken up. How do we wake up the American populace to this?
I don't think you can.
Well, I mean, they're brain dead already?
No, I don't think most people ever will. If you look through history, you'll see that most people never do anything, no matter how bad it is. And the most shocking example I've seen recently, you've got to see this. It was a magazine article published by an American magazine in the 1980s. It's at IAmTheWitness.com under the Eisenhower. You see it with General Eisenhower. There was a magazine article that shows after World War II was over, General Eisenhower took more than 1 million German prisoners and fenced them in and then didn't give them any water or food, and they just slowly died over the next few weeks. And they just sit there dying. And you'll see reports they buried one another as they, you know, the ones that died first would get buried by the others. They just sat there in a pen like animals dying. And there was also reports of the British and Americans is bombing cities like Dresden for no reason, just bombing them just to kill people. But the camp that Eisenhower set up, where after the war is over, you know, General Patton released his prisoners, Eisenhower killed them. This is what the American people are like. I bet you the Zionists could take millions of Americans, just put them in a pen, and then just not give them any water or food, and they would just quietly die, just like the Germans. And the idea...
That's their agenda right now, Eric.
Well, yeah, and I don't think there would be much resistance. There's only a small number. If you look through history, there's only a small number of people that ever do anything. Most people behave like obnoxious, spoiled, bratty children. And, you know, people don't like to face this, but look at history. You'll see it over and over and over. You can take the average person, take 1 million of them, put them in a pen, and don't give them any water, and they'll just sit there and die. It's already happened. They don't do anything. And the Americans, look at New York City. There are thousands of them suffering from health problems after breathing that demolition debris. They don't do anything. The only thing some of them do is complain they need help paying their medical bills. You know, do you realize what this is equivalent to? This is equivalent to an organized crime gang coming over to you, beating you, raping you, and then all you say is, I need some Band-Aids. Could you help
and,
me with
then extending you some more credit, fakery, and having you try to get that Verichip credit card now, only to get help on your medical bills, because America hasn't even set up medical treatment for people. So we're always beholding to them. So this is very serious, where the American populace has now put a stop to the pillaging and plundering constantly of their efforts, of all the work that they've done, the human resources that they've been used as for the Zionist agenda, bottom line. That is the main thing. How do we stop giving the taxpayers money? Can't the senators or people that have any kind of say now in Congress, or are they all bought off? What are we dealing with here, Ed?
I don't think there's a single one that in the Congress that will do anything. Cynthia McKinney was standing up to him to a certain extent, but then they drove her out. You see, they're cheating everywhere. And here's another trick they'll use that most people can't even figure out. You've heard about how there's cheating in the American elections, haven't you, up there in Canada? You've heard about that?
Yes. Well, they're using that computer system
okay.
to wipe off your real voted.
Right. So what is happening?
Let's say you're trying to put in an independent and put in whatever they want.
Yeah. So you're getting people complaining that there's cheating going on in the election system. So what do they do? Groups are forming, like blackboxvoting.org, and these people are coming forward saying, well, we'll expose this crime and help create it. Well, look at who they are. They're Zionists. They create the problem, and they're there to get control of the solution. You know, they're there to help save us from Bush by providing their candidates. It's all a trick. They're not trying to solve the problem of the voting. They're just trying to make sure they're in control of it. So I don't think there's any hope for Congress. They have control of both parties. They don't even allow anybody else. If you don't get their approval, you don't even get publicity. They have the media. They control it. They decide who gets publicity. And they're giving it only to certain people. Giuliani and Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. You know, there's only a few selected people that get the publicity.
And so they probably hand chose those people way back when.
Yes, they've been selected because the McCain family supposedly got some deal. I think it was from the Bronfmans. He lied. McCain's father, or was it his grandfather? One of them helped cover up the attack on the USS Liberty in 1967. And apparently, in return for this, the Bronfman family supplied them with all sorts of contracts or money. I forget all the details. It's that I Am the Witness that you can listen to the interviews. But you'll see it. He's apparently they work for the Bronfmans. And the Bronfman family, that's another one that's supposedly big in Canada, and supposedly they're involved with Scientology, although no one can really prove that one. But it's these families, the Bronfmans, the Oppenheimers, the Rothschilds, tremendous influence over America. And then you have some influencing the Democrats, the Simon family, the Rahm Emanuel and his family. They're everywhere you look. So how are you going to get any?
That's right. And people don't even know that what happened regarding the shooting of the leader, the black leader there.
Martin Luther King
was actually orchestrated by one of the members of the Mossad here, and this was a banking family member, Loeb III. Get this, very interesting. He was the mayor of Birmingham. They didn't like the fact that most of the black workers who were garbage workers were going on strike to get more work. They needed the slave race kept at bay. So people don't understand that what Martin Luther King was all about was getting more money for the serfs. They didn't want to have that happen, so the orchestration of killing Martin Luther King was all done by the banking families. Get that? People still don't get the drift that they want control of the money, but how much they actually give to the workers. So we've been living under a major slave race situation for quite some time right now. And now it's whoever works the hardest gets the least amount of coins. That's why we have the problem of Mexicans coming here, because Americans don't want to work hard at all. And other people will do so. That's why the jobs are now being lost. And different groups of people worldwide will do it for less.
Well, you see, and this is one of the things that brings down a nation whenever it becomes successful. Whenever a nation... You can see this all throughout history. You can even see it with the very first cities that developed in, I think they were calling it Mesopotamia. You know, if you look back what we now call Iraq, the very, very first cities that ever developed, once they became a city and they started getting a little bit of wealth, poor people would start coming in to get jobs. And human nature being selfish and lazy, when somebody has money, and somebody else says, hey, I'll do that work you don't want to do, most everybody will say, yeah, okay, here's the money. And what happens is every time a city or a nation becomes wealthy, poor people then offer to do work. Or in some cases, you know, years ago, even be slaves. And so the wealthy people would start bringing them in to use as servants and slaves and to do all the dirty work. And after a while, the nation becomes overwhelmed with all these poor people. It destroys the nation. Because you can't have a successful nation this way. You can't have one group using another group, especially when that one group is growing constantly. You see, it's equivalent to, you gotta think about it in a small scale to really understand this. Picture yourself in a family. Imagine you're a husband, a wife, and some kids. And imagine the husband, the wife, and the kids are all hiring Mexicans or Africans or Asians or whatever to do the house cleaning, to do the homework for school. Think about it, that happening on a small scale. You'd think you would be disgusted if you saw this. If you went to somebody's house and in the backyard they had some Mexicans camped out there and you said to them, what are these Mexicans camped out in your backyard for? And they respond, well, they're offering to clean the dishes for only a small amount of money. So we hire them, we let them live in our backyard. And then you go into the kid's room, you find a Mexican living in the closet. You say, what's this Mexican living in your closet for? Oh, well, he's offering to do my homework real cheap, so I hired him. You would be disgusted if you saw this kind of behavior, right? But it's going on.
But that's happening right now here in Canada.
And it's happening. You'll see it all throughout history. Whenever one nation becomes successful, they decide, oh, I'm not working anymore. Here, you can do my work. And they bring in people from other nations. And they bring in the poor people, often uneducated, and then after all these poor uneducated people are here, they start complaining. Oh, look at all these foreigners, all these uneducated foreigners. Well, whose fault is it? You brought them in. You can say it's due to just the laziness of the human being, you see, this selfishness. And it's going to destroy America. America is already one-third Africans and Mexicans and Chinese and other people. And it's growing by the millions from people from Mexico and South America. Europe has got the same problem. There's a report right now that Poland is complaining they're losing a lot of their workforce because they're moving off to Western Europe to take jobs. And so what you'll see in other nations like Britain and Norway and Belgium is they're complaining the place is filling up with all these poor people from East Europe and Africa and Asia. Well, whose fault is it? They're bringing them in because they're too lazy to do their own work. And see, what happens though is it creates racial problems and it creates a very unstable society because you can't have a stable society when one group of people is trying to use another group. You see?
Exactly. My father had this idea: kick them all in the shins or in the behind, and everyone back to their own country and stop this because this has escalated into world control. Whoever gives the lowest bid does the slave work, and then they'll get rid of the ones that are doing the griping. They'll always have the slave race going, and these people do it for next to nothing. This is what I see, what their agenda is all about. People don't understand that.
But you see this...
The world trade problem, the world trade that Canada and U.S. and Mexico got involved with. This is very important. Eric, what do you make of this world trade business that they want? And they run the World Bank and they run all of this Federal Reserve. It's a private bank.
Well, you see, think about what I was just saying. Bringing in people like this to serve as cheap labor, it destroys a nation, you see? Now think about this. If you're a Zionist and you're trying to take over the world, how do you take over the world when you're so small? You've got to destroy the other nations. And this is one way to do it, by bringing in people. And look who are the biggest slave traders and the biggest people behind all of this, the importing of foreigners as cheap labor. It's the same group of Zionists. Who's really behind it? Look at who's behind it. They're pushing for it secretly. And what it is it allows them to break societies down. And that is what they want. They want to get more control. They want to break down all of them if they can. They're doing like they did with Serbia and Yugoslavia. Break it down into little pieces. Keep the people fighting. Break down Iraq. Break down America. Get everybody fighting. Blacks and whites. Men and women. businessmen and employees. They're constantly creating fights between everybody. And by encouraging this mixing, well, it's not a mixing of people. What it is, it's an abuse. By encouraging people to migrate, to take jobs, that's breaking society down because you're using people. You're using them as like donkeys. You're not, the Mexicans that are coming to America are not coming over here to be citizens. They're coming over here as a replacement for slaves. And that breaks a society down. You see, and that's why I think they're pushing for this. They're secretly pushing for it. And what's even weirder, in California where I live, there are people saying we should put the Mexican children in their own special Spanish classes because they don't know English. Now, if you know anything about humans, you know that children pick up languages so fast and so easily that this is stupid to put Mexican children in a special Spanish-only class. So that, because, you see, what I think they're doing is they want the Mexicans to grow up without learning English, because that will cause even more racial trouble. Because then once they're adults, it's much harder to learn a language. So then by raising the Mexicans as Spanish only, then you've got problems between them and even other Mexicans that know English. So what I think they're doing constantly is just creating fights, creating racial trouble, and stirring trouble up. Every time, you'll see this with the media also, when they have a fight, take that example of Rodney King. Remember when Rodney King was beaten by the white policeman?
Yes. That was a big media story covered.
Yes, it was a very big media
story. 9/11 over and over and over again.
Yes, but what most people don't even realize is that the media turned this into white people beating black people. They had gotten millions and millions of people fooled into thinking this was a racial thing. What most people don't even realize is when Rodney King finally stopped his car and gave up. You know, he was trying to outrun the police, and when he finally gave up, the black people that were passengers in the car just got out quietly, obeyed the police, and stepped off to the side. Nobody beat them. There were black people in that room and in that car. Rodney was the only one fighting with the police. He was the only one they lost their temper with. He was the only one they beat. And yet, most people, if you bring this issue up, they're surprised to even find out there was passengers in that car. And they were just as black as Rodney. If those policemen were simply trying to attack black people, why did they let the passengers go away without getting a beating? You see what it was? It had nothing to do with race. This guy was causing trouble. He was resisting everything they were doing, even the black passengers. There are reports that his black passengers were telling him, "Stop it, Rodney." They were even trying to get him to quit fighting with the police. But no, he didn't want to. He was supposedly on some kind of drug at the time. And anyway, the police lose their temper, hit him too much, and they turn it into a racial thing, fool people into thinking it's all race-related, and start riots. You see what I mean? They are doing this constantly. The media is the criminal gang. And they're fooling people over and over into fighting with each other, into hating one another. And then the Rodney King riots, they were warning people ahead of time that the trial is coming up for those policemen. And if the policemen are not convicted, then the black people will riot. They started prepping people, just like when 9/11 occurred, they were immediately there to tell you it was Arabs over and over. Well, prior to the trial of those policemen that beat Rodney King, they were saying, well, if they're not convicted, they're going to riot. They went over and over this, over the days before. And then when the trial happens and the policemen were not convicted, well, guess what? Riots occurred. And take a look at which buildings got burned and where the riots were, and you have to wonder who's really behind that riot. Who was really burning those buildings? They burned, for example, Fredericks of Hollywood, an underwear store. Now, why would black people go burn an underwear store if they're mad at white policemen? And then they burned some Korean businesses and some other businesses. You know, there was one black person I was talking to who lives in the area, and he said he thinks what they were doing is they were burning the buildings that they were trying to put a road through. You know, it was all deliberate. Everything's deliberate here. It was all a trick. They were using this.
They'll actually do riots in certain areas where they want a land grab.
Or
what I see, and this might happen in the state of New York, in Bronx, in various locales where they want to redevelop.
And then
what I see.
Yeah, and plus people like Fredericks of Hollywood may have just burned their own building down for insurance money or something. You see,
exactly.
See, when they have something like this, there's a lot of people involved, and so you have the problem that trying to understand it can be very difficult because some people may get involved for other reasons. Like, in some cases, some of the buildings may have been burned to allow somebody to get control of the land. Some of the buildings may have been burned just because the landlord knew this was coming and decided to take advantage of it for insurance purposes. So you have that problem, too. But all the time you see this happening where they try to get these fights going, you've got to realize the media is the enemy. If you just think of it that way, if people just realize that television is lying to you, don't believe them. Because
so it's almost like a mind control mechanism, this loop tube, and they've been doing it since its inception. And now they've got the control of the young folks, and there's pretty heavy raw core pornography happening on a daily basis. And people are really, especially young, being now turned on to massive crime, and then they're almost like not even dealing with it in the fact that it might be a mass way of getting these kids to be mass murderers when you see the crime scene over and over again and people on a morgue slab. It actually makes people indifferent, and they're hitting on the young folks. This wasn't probably allowed in the 60s or 50s, this type of programming, but it is now, and Hollywood is running it.
Well, that's right. I think that might be another thing they're trying to do is create children that have see, if you can create children that have never had a happy childhood and they just grow up around killings and dead bodies and abusive conditions, it may be much easier to get them to become dysfunctional. Plus,
happening within the family.
Well, plus it may be easy. They may have discovered that this is an easy way to get people to work for them, because this is what Kay Griggs was saying. If you listen to the Kay Griggs interview, I have some excerpts at hugequestions.com. She says that what they will do is find orphans and people that are victims of abuse, because those are the people that are the easiest to control. And it may be that when a person doesn't have a happy childhood, it's when they become adults, you know, they may have less of an interest in life in the first place. They may be more like just an animal that exists from one day to the next, and it may be easier to get them to do things.
Now, we're speaking to Eric Hufschmid. It's highly important what we're speaking about. And Eric, you have a few websites. Let's tell our listeners how they can clue into your website. Spell your name and the different websites you have going. All three of them, I noticed, that were on the internet when you Google search.
Well, my name is Eric Hufschmid, H-U-F like Frank, S like Sam, C-H-M-I-D. And the easiest website to remember is hugequestions.com, H-U-G-E, questions.com. And from there, it'll take you to two other sites if you want, erichufschmid.net and iamthewitness.com. Iamthewitness.com is just like the word spell, iamthewitness.com. There, that has a lot of audio files and other articles.
And it's also erichufschmid.net, but it's all interlinked with what erichufschmid.net starts with, right? Because I've noticed
right, they all connect together.
They're all interconnected, right?
Right.
Okay. And it's highly important. What else websites do you offer our listeners to get into that are highly informative of the lies, the deception that we've been living under for decades now here in America Canada?
It's difficult to recommend a site that I don't actually personally work with, because it's what has been turning out is almost everybody involved in this the so-called truth movements or anti-war movements, almost all of them turn out to be Zionist fronts. And so it's hard to recommend one. I kind of hesitate now. If I'm not working on it, I don't want to trust it.
Okay, forget anyone else's. Just listen to Eric's. Very good. It's not bad because we've gotten quite a few different speakers on, but we're discerning who speaks the truth and who speaks with a forked tongue, bottom line.
Yeah, I don't want to say that everybody is deceptive, but it's just so many, time after time. And see, one thing that gives a lot of these people away is that they've been out there for decades doing all these investigations. I only came along after September 1st. And, you know, in the space of September 1st, I've uncovered more than all of these people in decades of work. It doesn't make sense that somebody could be in this field for decades. And meanwhile, you know, I'm learning things in just a few years, and they just keep repeating the same stuff over and over and over.
Tell our listeners, too, how did you get involved in this 9/11? You saw something on the internet and something piqued your interest.
Did you
start questioning what happened during the 9/11? How did you personally get involved, Eric?
Well, I didn't have a TV or newspapers or magazines. I got disgusted with the media as a kid. I didn't think of it as being corrupt. I just thought of it as being stupid and a waste of time. So when I left home, I decided I'm never going to get a TV or magazines or newspapers. I didn't want to support such what I thought were idiotic, just stupid stuff. So when the attack occurred, I didn't know. I didn't have any media contact. I only heard about it from my mother, and then I looked on the internet, and I just thought, well, the Arabs are attacking from all the meddling in our affairs. And I didn't think too much of it at the time. I just, after a couple of days, put a document on the internet saying that the Arabs were like Lorena Bobbitt, you know, she was just getting tired of being abused and was fighting back. That's how I saw it. And I saw on the internet people weren't really responding to what I was saying. There were complaints that something was funny about the attack and that the government can't be trusted. And I was thinking, what are these conspiracy nuts complaining about? It seemed to make sense to me. You meddle with the Arabs, you know, meddle in their nations and they attack you. What's so strange? But after a couple months of their seeing this over and over, I started wondering, what are they talking about? How can they see something funny here? So I decided to look through the photos and the news reports, and that's when, you know, when you look closely at the collapse of the towers, that's when it hits you. These towers didn't just fall down. They were blown up. And so my first reaction was I put a document on the internet with this kind of evidence in January of 2002. And I started emailing professors and engineers. I just started looking through lists of people trying to figure out who would have experience with explosives and steel structures. I said, why don't you look into this? It looks like they were blown up. And nobody seemed to care. I spent a lot of time sending emails out to people, and nobody seemed to care. And after a while, I decided if nobody else is going to say something, then I will. So I put a book together, that Painful Questions and Analysis of the September 11th Attack. And that's how that book came about. It's because nobody else seemed to be doing anything.
Now, this is rather interesting that the American populace didn't put two to two together. I happened to go from Toronto to New York one time, and I took a hotel room right in the Hilton Hotel, shall I say. Spent $250 for one night. This is back in the 80s here. And all of a sudden, at 6 o'clock in the morning, kaboom, I thought America or Manhattan was under attack. They had to peel me off the ceiling. I thought, what the heck happened here now? The great ruckus. And then I look out the window and the building adjoining was just demolished. So I went down in the lobby, told the people at the front lobby, the manager in question, why am I paying $250? Why don't you notify your clientele who are taking a room that there's going to be a building that's going to be demolished? Well, he said, when we lose money, bottom line money. So this is rather strange that people didn't even start questioning. The manager said this is commonplace. Buildings are being imploded all throughout Manhattan, making way for new skyscrapers. So interesting that the Manhattan populace didn't speak out about it and smell a rat from day one.
Well, that is very interesting. And, you know, one of the things that I was wondering is why are the firemen not talking? Why are the policemen not talking? Because the firemen claim that it was their friends that were killed. And you'd think, well, if it's their friends, how come they don't care? And one of the clues to what's going on here is there's a video somewhere on the internet, I forget where, where someone says that it was one of the either a policeman or a fireman or a rescue worker who was saying, on that day, on that morning, while these people are trying to rescue people, somebody was pointing out that the ATM machines were not working and they could go and get some cash. And they were getting filmed as they were stealing cash, and they were being encouraged to steal other things and getting filmed by it. And this could explain it. They were being set up again by saying, oh, look, the ATM machines don't work. Let's get some money. Come on, guys, come on. And they're getting fooled into thinking, yeah, let's just take a couple handfuls. And they're being filmed meanwhile. And so then later someone can come back to them and say, you want to talk about 9/11? How would you like this video of you stealing cash from the ATM machines to go out? So this may have been what happened. The policemen, the firemen, the rescue workers that were over there were being encouraged to do something. And this guy was saying, if you seemed to be showing signs of asking questions or any morality, you weren't let on the site. They were kind of keeping those people away. And what they were doing is, like I just said before, they're looking for people to take advantage of. They're looking for people who just aren't that smart, or they've got a problem, and they're willing to join in and then be blackmailed. And the ones that can see through what's going on, or the ones that are just a little too moral, they were being pushed aside, saying, get out of here. You go over there and... We don't need your help.
The witnesses here pretty well are the firefighters, and they made a lot of grievances in the earlier reports. They were very angry that they were told to get off the site, especially when they were trying to look for their comrades. And then all of a sudden you see all these Brinks trucks show up hauling out the gold. I thought it was the biggest gold heist that there ever was, alongside an insurance scam is a gold heist at the time. And anyone that was going to be privy to looking at this information was told to leave now. So I heard the first report saying that the firefighters were very grievous about the banking cartel, whatever, who was the masterminds of the Mossad, the whole shebang of Zionist agenda makers here now, propagandists that set this in motion. And it's highly important that people that wanted to make a difference started saying it's all about the money, bottom line. Do you make this story as one of the problems that besets the firefighters and the police as well as coming forth?
The money aspect,
like you said, blackmail.
Well, yes, and you see, you mentioned also they were trying to keep people away. But they weren't trying to keep everybody away. What they seemed to be doing is keeping away the people who seemed either not under their control or too honest, or, you know, people they didn't know. You see, they weren't keeping everybody away from that site. They had a lot of people there cleaning it up, throwing stuff in the trash, confiscating evidence.
Mafia was the only one that was allowed. Wouldn't you think that was
them? Yeah, them.
The people that hauled the debris away. Who were they? Who did they allow on the site? Key question. And your book started this major role. I was flabbergasted. I also saw a major article, well, it was an advertisement that showed up in the New York Times, and it had your book to be one of the very main books that people should get to understand what 9/11 was all about. How do they get your book, Eric?
Oh, now that's a very interesting story. That advertisement, that was one ad that, in 2004, there was a person who inherited money years earlier when his dad died. He inherited several million dollars. And, you know, unlike most people that inherit millions, he didn't want to spend his money just buying jewelry and stuff like that. So, you know, he was always looking for something useful to do with it. So he went to one of the 9/11 rallies. Meetings that we had that was being held in San Francisco, heard about my book, kind of dismissed it and thought I was a nut. But he got the book anyway because he said, you know, he bought the book in my video. on the ground said, well, I don't, I think this guy's a nut, but I want to support these people. They're trying. So he bought it, took it home, stuck it on the shelf, and let it sit there until somebody finally convinced him, would you just look at it? And he finally, when he looks at my video and book, he realizes, my God, this stuff, it's true. They really blew the buildings up. And so he went on a campaign to start advertising my book. And he advertised it in newspapers and a couple magazines. Then he started putting cable television advertisements out. And, of course, you can imagine the reaction to this. This just created a real problem among the Zionists. Here's a guy with money advertising my book and video. And so this is when the Popular Mechanics and Benjamin Chertoff came out. And when Art Bell asked Benjamin Chertoff, you know, why'd you write this article criticizing 9/11 conspiracy theories, he made the remark that it was in response to these ads that were being placed by Jimmy Walter.
Whoa.
And so
gets right into your turf here.
Yeah, because see, Jimmy Walter was advertising my book and spreading this information at a rate that none of us could afford to do. And so they were panicking. That's when they brought out Benjamin Chertoff, put him into, you know, to get Popular Mechanics to help stop this. And what they did is that they ended up surrounding Jimmy. Jimmy at the time was fully convinced that, you know, Israel is our friend. It's our greatest ally. And, you know, they have a right to exist and we should defend them. He was a firm believer in this. And so he didn't think anything strange that, you know, all these Jews were coming forward. I'll help you, Jimmy. I'll help you with your website. I'll help you get this information out. He didn't think anything strange. And, you know, I would try to tell him, you know, there's deception everywhere. You got to watch it. These people are not honest. He, like most people, would dismiss it. And so they ended up wasting a lot of his money, sabotaging some of his meetings when he held meetings. And somehow in 2005, or wait, the 2006, I guess it was, they somehow got him to start promoting the theory that the airplanes that crashed into the World Trade Center towers were illusions created by the news crews through this blue screen technology. And then a few months later, he just quit completely from the 9/11 movement. He's gone. So somehow they just totally ruined him. I don't know exactly what they did, but this is what happens. It's like when bacteria get into your body, the white cells come over to it, surround it, and try to incapacitate it. The Zionists do the same thing. When someone comes forward to expose their crimes, they start surrounding you. They say, oh, we're your friend. I'll help you. Here's some useful advice. Check out this website, or here, check this person out. They try to fool you into thinking they're your friends, and meanwhile, what they're doing is looking for your weaknesses, trying to set you up, trying to sabotage you, trying to blackmail you, trying to ruin you somehow. And they did it with him. They got him. He's gone now.
This is their agenda of world control.
Yeah, and it works. It works because people don't believe it when I tell them that this is, you can't trust these people. And they've got a monstrous force. Israel is a training center for these people. It's a base of operations.
People don't even understand that in Canada. We had the Ontario OPP from various divisions, various cities all across Ontario go to Israel to be informed and instructed and trained. Trained is the key word right there.
Right, they're training.
That's right. Why are they going there to be trained? What is this? A massive Zionist now police state that is being set up right before our eyes and we're asleep? What do you make of this training center?
Well, they do that with American police also. You see, people don't see, no one's right now suspecting this. They don't. They all assume that Israel is our best friend, and the media tells them this over and over, and they fall for the trick. And even when they get caught doing things, they get away with it. Even when they get caught, they make an excuse about how, oh, there was just that one time, or maybe there's a couple criminals in Israel. Don't worry about that. They're still our best friends. People don't realize they're training our policemen, our politicians. They're not our friends.
Stephen Harper, our prime minister, is flag waving Israel's flag. It's already here. Forget the Canadian flag. So you know who the puppet masters are. And the Americans likewise. When you see, like I said, Shimon Peres, Ehud Olmert coming in and taking over the Congress, you know who are really the bottom line pulling the strings, because they control the money.
Well, the money, the media, and the government, and see, they're in the court system too. So this is why you can't get anywhere with legal fights. Yeah, they're in the courts, and 9/11 is a good example. All what Bolin has noticed, Christopher Bolin wrote. You'll find this article also at IamTheWitness.com. He noticed all of the 9/11 victims that try to do anything legally all go through this one judge, Alvin Hellerstein. No, think about this. If you send all your cases to one Zionist judge, all he has to do is block everything or delay it and somehow ruin it. One judge. If you can get the other, if you can just get it so that all of the cases come to him. And that's what's happening. He's getting control and then blocking them. And then plus, a lot of the lawyers that are offering to take 9/11 cases, like Phil Berg, they're there to ruin things. They never accomplish anything. Nobody can even figure out how they make a living. He took the case for Ellen Mariani, then he went to William Rodriguez after she dumped him. No one realizes these people are part of this Zionist network. They're not
the
here to help
thing
you.
Same thing as the lawyer Mark Lane regarding the Warren Commission. Big hype, no delivery. So it's an ongoing problem.
Mark Lane, you mean of the American Free Press?
Exactly.
So, yeah, see, that's another one. And the American Free Press has turned out to be one of their groups. And Mark Lane, you already knew about this then?
Yes, I did, because I started doing research myself. I saw the whole shebang. That's why I've been reading all their books and all their lies and deceit.
Well, you see,
it's
Mark...
all money-making for them.
It's money-making, but see, at the same time, Mark Lane and the others, what they are also trying to do is get control of the Kennedy assassination and everything else. He's there. They're always there in the role of a truth seeker or in the role of a lawyer who's trying to help. But what they're really doing is trying to get control, identify the witnesses, make sure nothing's ever said that they don't want said. They're there to control it.
That's right, because the question should be asked is who ordered the hit of JFK. Bottom line, it still comes down to the 13 banking families. People don't understand the fact that he was making the money, the American currency, for the people, printed by the government, not the private Federal Reserve, which is run by them. So that's where it's all at.
Well, you know, that one other thing. Remember when I said the dancing Israelis said they were there to document the event of 9/11?
That's right.
Now, think about this.
The French coincidence, also. Get into the French coincidence and these dancing Arabs, so-called.
Oh, the French.
Or Israelis, really. But,
you mean that French coincidence?
Yeah, that's right.
You mean the one, that little video I put together?
Yes, talk about that. That's quite interesting.
Well, okay, what I was going to mention first before I forget, remember I said they were going to document the event. What people don't realize is the world wars, the Holocaust, the attack on the USS Liberty, 9/11, all of these things are events to them. They are part of Israel's development. They are, when Israel, if Israel actually gets established and if they get total control of the world, this will go into their history books as how we developed Israel. And it will go right into the history books because they won't have to hide it any longer. It will say right in their history books, we did this attack in 1946. We did 9/11 in 2001. This is how we helped create the war in Afghanistan and Iraq and destroy the Arabs. It will be part of their history. You see, they want to document this. And the Kennedy assassination is the same thing. Who was there filming it? In the right position.
That's right.
And who was he friends with? People in New York. He was there to document the event. People don't get this. These are events to them. To us, they're attacks. To us, it's murder. To them, it's an event in their development. Just like the development of America, you know, there was a killing of an Indian. To an American, it was an event. To the Indians, it was a murder. It's the same thing, the same concept, you see?
This is mind-blowing information that nobody even knows about, so I'm glad that you wrote this 9/11 painful questions. How can the listener get it?
Oh, if they go to Huge Questions, it'll show them where they can go for that. And I put that in the Kennedy assassination. See, people don't get this, the Pruder thing. They don't get they don't understand why is there always somebody there filming all this stuff. They want to film it.
They want to document it for history.
It's their history.
That's right. And it's blatantly now recorded. They perpetrate the lie to the masses, but then they've got the real shebang in their own coffers and under their own control. Interesting. So this is highly important. I also wanted to ask, do you think at the same time that they were developing their nuclear facility in Israel, that the information was being funneled from Canada of how to set up this nuclear plant there? What do you make of that? Because they had the ongoing spy situation with the Rosenbergs and on coming forth. What do you make of this, Eric?
Well, yeah, I'm not too sure where all the nuclear technology comes from. See, Kennedy was supposedly one of the people trying to stop Israel from getting nuclear bombs, but they supposedly got some of it from France. And I don't know all the details on that one. That was something I never checked into, but somehow there is definitely a French connection to all of this stuff somehow. And if you look at the current French candidates for president, Sarkozy is one of them. He's a Zionist. He's there right now, possibly going to win the election. And if he wins, that means France is now under the control of a Zionist. You see,
they're looking for people easily to manipulate, or they'll put in one of their own right in there.
That's right, and he is one of theirs. He's not even one of their. He's not. They don't even have to manipulate him. He is one of theirs. Whereas some of the others, like Nancy Pelosi or Clinton, are more like just following orders. They're not really high-level players making decisions. So, but there is the other thing that you mentioned, that French Connection video I put together. It's a little short thing on not too easy to find, but you can find it at Huge Questions. What I was pointing out, the strange thing, is those French filmmakers that were in New York City that filmed the very first attack on the World Trade Center. I mean, not the first attack, the first plane that hit the North Tower. Everybody thinks, oh, what a coincidence that these French filmmakers just happened to be there and film that. Well, you look closely at how long they were there, what they were doing there. It looks like somebody told them to go there, but they didn't tell them the whole story. This is the other thing that the Israelis will do. They'll let you in on a little bit, but they never tell you exactly what you're doing. It's common with not just Israel, militaries in general, businesses do it. You know, sometimes you do it just because you don't want to waste your time explaining everything. You know, it's a need-to-know basis. You tell somebody only what he needs to know to get his job done. They were told, apparently, go there and document these firemen. And then on September 10th, the day before the attack, they must have gotten the word, the attack is coming tomorrow, get ready to film the World Trade Center, be at this particular position, a plane is going to hit. But they didn't know anything else. And see, that was the day, that night is when they celebrated. And everybody thinks, oh, another coincidence. They happened to pick that day to celebrate, and they just happened to be completely oblivious to the fact that they didn't cook enough food. And I mean, you have to watch the video to think about this. It looks like this is how they got France to keep quiet about the attack. They somehow told some of the French people that this attack was going to come. It was probably people in the French government. They were probably told there was going to be an attack by some Arabs, and let's just take advantage of it. So they were tricked into going along with it, not realizing what was really happening, you see. And so these French people filmed it, and then they didn't know the towers had explosives in it. So they went down there, and both of them almost died. And I think, but you see, now France cannot really complain. The French government can't complain, hey, this attack was by Israel, because then Israel can say, yeah, well, we told you the attack was coming, and you sent people to film it. So.
Ah, blackmail.
Well, right, and that's just some of the blackmail. Who knows what else they've got? This is just some of it. You see, they've got to keep everybody quiet. You can't conduct an attack like this and start a war unless you can make sure that other nations are going to keep their mouth shut. And how do you do that? And you look at, where did the plane hit? It hit the Fuji Bank in the South Tower, and the Fuji officials didn't show up for work. Somehow Japan and the Fuji Bank, some Japanese officials are involved. They may not have known the whole extent of what was happening, but they were somehow involved. The French seem to be somehow involved. The British, it's obvious they're involved. I mean, they were helping to cover it up just like George Bush. You see, everybody, before this attack occurred, they were setting people up to be blackmailed. And then you have the stock trades. Who was doing those put options? See, what they may have done is gone to some of the other people and said to them, you know, the Arabs are going to attack and it'll raise the price of, or lower the price, whatever, of stock. So if you buy right now and do this specific thing, you're going to make some money. Again, they didn't necessarily tell people the whole story. They just told them a little bit, fooled them into buying doing the put options. And then when the attack occurs, then the Israelis can say to them, are you going to tell on us? Then we're going to tell that you knew ahead of time it was coming and you bet on it and you made millions of dollars.
That's right. So they, again, got them in the corner. They don't want to disclose who they were.
Yeah, because there's
a lot of people probably in political positions were then cornered in this checkmate game. They don't want to come forth, and this is a form of bribery.
Yeah, and another thing you'll see doing, you'll see strange events happening. You'll see news report. Remember when the news report came out there about the suspicious stock trades in the first place? How did that get out? Remember, the Zionists control the media. How did that get out in the first place? They may have put it out on purpose because there was a fight going on with people saying, you didn't tell us those buildings were being blown up. You didn't tell, you lied to us. And they said, oh yeah? What are you going to do about it? And they said, they put this out as a way to twist their arm and say, if you don't stop it, we're going to turn you in. And you see the same thing with Princess Diana information. Every once in a while, for no apparent reason, the Zionists that control the media will put out some information that hints that Princess Diana was murdered. And then it just disappears all of a sudden. You see the same thing with the stock market. It'll just appear and then disappear. And what I think they're doing is they put this out when they have to put somebody in their place.
Like Prince Charles said he's really a fag. That comes out now and again.
Oh, does it? I haven't been paying too much attention to that.
I'm a jokester here, but that's the type of information to keep him in line.
Yeah, but you'll see that when these reports come out, they come out and then they vanish. There's no follow-up. And how did they get out there in the first place? They control the media. They let it out is the only way you can explain it. And they release just a little bit to put people in their place. It's like when Larry Silverstein went on television and said, I got a call from the fire department commander telling me that they cannot, you know, they couldn't put the fires out in Building 7. Remember that quote?
That's right.
See, I think what he was doing there is he was getting trouble from the firemen, from the policemen. They were grumbling about how these buildings were blown up and they're getting mad. And he went out there on television to put them in their place. By saying this stupid remark, and then all of them have to then watch him say this on television, and they're probably thinking, I can't believe this. I can't believe he can do this. It's putting them in their place. It's intimidation when a criminal does this sort of a thing.
He's like laughing right in their face saying, I'm going to have the building pulled, and what are you going to do about it? I'm still going to collect because the insurance companies are part of the fraud.
Well, yeah, and he actually...
all of these conspiracy complicitous insurance companies other than Chubb. Who was in on this big take and who gave the big coin to Larry Silverstein?
Well, right. Plus, he also put the blame on the fire department commander, you see. He said the fire department commander made the decision to pull it.
Oh, rather than
remember?
Him, right?
He said, yeah, he just said, oh, I suggested it, but he made the decision to pull, and then we watched the building collapse. So he's making it, he's saying something that is so absurd. The only way you can explain it is that he is trying to intimidate the fire department. And then look at what also happened. After the World Trade Center towers were blown up and the whole thing, Queen Elizabeth invited Rudy Giuliani, the mayor, and the fire department commander and the police chief, and gave them all awards. Rudy Giuliani became a knight commander of the British Empire, and the other two got some sort of awards also. Now, you have to ask yourself...
Tommy Banks from the Queen, for that matter. So they're all in on it, even the generals now the invasion of Iraq. Get a load of that, Eric.
Yeah, and see, so you have the royal families going along with this. And it's unbelievable, the number of people involved in this stuff. But what confuses people is that they think of this criminal network as one happy, united family. And I don't think that's true at all. I think If you look at any group, it doesn't matter whether they're criminal or not, look at a business, you will find there are arguments between the people on how to run the business, who should be in control, how it should be structured. And you have to ask yourself, a criminal network, don't you think they also have disputes as to who's in control and how it will be structured and what they will do? And you've got to think about this. Of course they're going to have fights. And if anything, history shows criminal groups have worse fights. They're more violent. They're more diabolical. They're more double-crossing going on among criminal groups than there are among businesses. And that is what I think makes this criminal network behind 9/11 so confusing. When you look at it, it looks like there's tremendous fights going on between them. George Soros fighting with George Bush, and you know what I mean? You see,
I understand.
You can see a lot of fights going on, and it gets so confusing. People think of this network as one happy family. They're not one happy family. You've got serious criminals in this group. You've got pedophiles. You've got lunatics. Some of them may be more or less normal, but there are some seriously mentally ill people in this group. And you've got to expect there's going to be fights, double-crossing, triple-crossings, and just plain lunacy. And that's why when you look at it, you can't always make sense of what they're doing and why they're fighting with each other.
That's right. So that's why they've mixed up everything, even on the Internet. So when you got involved, I think you discerned the truth between the lies.
Well, it took a while.
That took a while, right.
Because
I'm very glad that you put this together, because I heard your name first time during the 9/11 public inquiry here in Toronto. But I was surprised that you didn't show up.
No, they don't want me. You see, here's the other thing that's been happening. The other thing that I noticed is the way they avoid me. In the beginning, they sort of avoided me just a little bit. Now it's total. It's just absolutely total. Me, Christopher Boland, Daryl Smith, we're on the blacklist.
The French fellow.
He's American. He's just living in France right at the moment. He married a French woman, and he just happens to be there now for the past 10 years or so. But he's actually American. But you will notice it has gotten to the point where they have separated so much. It is so clear now. It's so obvious. Their separation is helping to identify who they are. You see? If they really wanted to expose 9/11, why wouldn't they tell you about my book?
Exactly. So I saw it being sold at the beginning there with the public inquiry, but I was really aghast that you weren't one of the keynote speakers.
No, they don't want me. And then you have to look at all the people involved in these groups. You know, Carol Brulé and her deception dollar, the global research, and, you know, all of those people. You know, when Sherman Skolnick was around, they were always avoided us. Always. And it's even worse today. And you have to ask yourself, why? They'll promote other people's books. Is mine really that bad that they won't even mention it by name? And so it's a sign. This is the criminal network. And they're now worried so much that they're worried that people will listen to me. And they're worried so much that they're trying to avoid even mentioning my name so no one even knows who I am. They're so afraid that somebody might listen to what I'm saying and look at my website.
Well, that's what they did with Eustace Mullins. They tried to make you into an anti-Semite. That's their first thing that they do, and they did that with David Icke. They start labeling you as a nut bar, and they did that quick with the fact of the reptilians, but guess what? He superseded by being able to print his own book and somehow still be able to sell it worldwide via the Internet. So there's ways and means. You can jumpstart somehow, kickstart somebody understanding that this is the truth, must get out.
What they're doing with Eustace Mullins could be even worse, though. He just had he was just invited to come out to San Francisco to speak at a few little tiny meetings. And this IHR, Institute for Historical Review, was there, Mark Weber. And the strange thing is that they invited a woman that's part of this voting fraud investigation,
About the black box.
Yeah, they invited one of, you know, she was invited. Her name is, here, let me just quick, something like Sharona. Oh, wait a minute. What is her name? She was invited from New Hampshire to come out, and they put her in the same hotel room as Eustace Mullins. She's Jewish. Now, think about this. How often do strangers, how often would any woman be willing to be put into the same hotel room as a man she doesn't even know? You tell me, how often does that happen?
That's right. Well, they tried to make a big fiasco here in Toronto by not letting him come across the border. I finally had an interview with him, and the man is talking straight goods. I couldn't believe he was the one who looked into the Library of Congress, did a lot of research for years on the secrets behind the Federal Reserve, and bottom line is they don't want this information out there. But guess what? Someone put it on the internet, and Eustace says he's probably never made any type of money at all because they've sabotaged him regarding this. So here are the people that are spinning out the truth, and they sabotage you so that you never have any coin, just enough to live on, but that's their agenda. Probably
yeah.
Same with your book. This is highly important that people clue into what's going on, what's the truth and what's lies.
Well, not only that, but see, in his case, they may have set him up for something else. If there's a report at I Am the Witness that shows that in 1950s, he was driving, he was in a car, I don't think he was a driver, he was a passenger. There was a Jewish guy in there with him and somebody else, and the Jewish guy, they picked up a hitchhiker. This is the 1950s, you know, when people hitchhiked. They picked it up, and the Jewish guy raped the kid. It was a boy. Raped him, and then left him off the side of the road. And, of course, later they got arrested. The kid got the license plate number, and they got arrested. Now, this is in the report. I can't tell you if this is all true. This is the report. It says this on the Internet, that then they got arrested. Now, think about this. This could have been now the setup to blackmail Eustace Mullins, that you'd ever talk, if you don't do what we say, you're going to go to jail because you were there when it happened. Do you remember I said they're always looking for ways to set people up? They may have saw Eustace Mullins was a possible problem, and they may have set him up way back then. And see, this, the woman's name is Sharona Morel, M-E-R-E-L. She's the one they just brought out from the East Coast to be in his hotel room and follow him around in his hotel room and be with him as he goes from one of the meetings to the next. And think about that. What a coincidence that they do these things to him. Why are they doing this to him? See, it's possible they think there are. It's possible that he is homosexual, that the accusations are true, and they're blackmailing him, setting him up in order to stop him from saying too much, you see. They may have said to him, look, you already got some stuff out. You're not going any farther. That's it. And they follow him around, trying to set him up, trying to ruin him, trying to take his money, and blackmail him. People have to take this seriously. These people are not fooling around. All you have to do is look at the World Wars. Take a look at the photos of those Germans, the million Germans sitting in there slowly dying in their little camp that Eisenhower set up to kill them all. They're not fooling around. They're not going to let Eustace Mullins talk. They're not going to let any of us talk. They're trying their best to stop it. And their primary method is to fool people. That's the easiest way for a small group of people to do
this.
Right,
have them bickering amongst each other.
Yeah, get them to fight, but the blackmail, the easiest way to get somebody to shut up is to blackmail them, to lure them into something and then threaten them. Scott Ritter got caught trying to arrange sex with a kid, and it turns out they were police, and he got arrested. His case was sealed. He didn't get in trouble. His case was sealed. This is a sign that someone said to him, here's your options. You do what we tell you or you go to jail. And now he's running around the country giving speeches. But he never exposes 9/11. He says the towers came down because of fire. He is their puppet now. He got caught in a trap trying to have sex with a kid, and now he's their puppet. Do you see what I mean? They are, the FBI runs these sting operations all the time, and look who's running a lot of the pornography and the sex slaves. It's coming from Israelis. Who runs a lot of the strip clubs? People like Larry Silverstein. And if you go into their clubs and they lure you into doing something illegal and they're filming it, then they got you too.
Exactly. Don't forget about Jack Ruby with his carousel club. So they started way back when with burlesque and on and on. they're the masters of the pornography in Hollywood. People should really look into it, and that's what they do. They have cameras all over the place. So once you join their club, or they lure you into the club, your history is to play ball their way.
That's right. And they are the ones that sell a lot of the stuff, the pornography. So if you buy their pornography, then they've got your name and address and credit card number and everything else. And so they can look through their list of customers when it comes time to do something, and they think, oh, well, we need a mayor for the town of such and such. Let's see who we have as a customer in the area. And they might say to him, hey, do you want to be mayor? We'll fund you. And then after he's in mayor, he says, now, by the way, if you don't do what we're going to say, if you don't do what we say.
If you don't give all the contracts to the Bronfman family,
right.
Take a look at all the contracts they got under the company Ramparts. I didn't understand that until I looked in the Toronto library right at the City Hall, and it was quite interesting. It was all the agendas in their private meetings. There wasn't even a tender system. These guys get it awarded all for them. And this is the way they started out, with just collecting firewood into the biggest conglomerate worldwide. Mass manipulation and deceit and lies and insurance scam and on
right.
People have never questioned it.
And then when they get caught, what they do is they set somebody up to take the blame. One person, two people maybe. You'll see this with the gangs of Chicago. You know, people think, well, Al Capone's gone, it's all cleaned up. It's not cleaned up, it's the same people. Al Capone might be gone, but the rest, it's still under the control of organized crime. And the same will be true if they blame Bush and Cheney for 9/11, or even if they throw in some other people like Rumsfeld and some others. Even if they throw a dozen people in and arrest a dozen people, they still have control of the media, the banking, the military, and so many other things. So it doesn't matter if they have to sacrifice a dozen or two people. You see? This is why the people keep getting fooled. They'll sacrifice a couple. People think, oh, it's problem solved. It's like with this latest guy who just admitted to 21 or 29, 31 terrorist attacks, that Sheikh Mohammed Khalil, whatever.
Oh, this last fellow. You
mean? Yeah, the last guy.
That's right.
So what did
Sheikh Mohammed or whatever?
Yeah, whatever his name is. But see, what they're all they have to
Khalid,
do is
Khalid. That's now I got Khalid.
Yeah, it's easier to say KSM. His
Mohammed.
Initials. Yeah, use his initials KSM. But people get fooled in thinking, well, problem solved. They just arrested whoever did it, and that's what they're doing with Bush. Impeach Bush. Impeach Bush. What good's it do to impeach Bush? Bush is not the mastermind of the world's problems. And see, this is, they're fooling people again. People are just such suckers. They'll get them all to go on demonstrations and demonstrate against Bush, and they'll put in someone else. What, Pelosi? Like, now that's a solution?
That's right. Would you ever see Ehud Olmert or Shimon Peres or Benjamin Nahu or whatever?
Netanyahu?
That's right. Brought before a tribunal worldwide of the masters of genocide? Not in a long shot. So this is where we're at. That's the masterminds behind the whole deception and the Rothschild family, the 13 banking cartel. So this is really important. Now, what I'm going to say is we're going to divide this whole thing into three parts, and we're very honored to have Eric Hufschmid on as our very important guest, that no one would ever get the information like Eric has out there. So I'm glad to have you on spyman.ca. And we're going to post it up on our network, but we're going to get people to understand this is highly important, that they get involved in looking at your book, buying your book and your DVD, and spreading the word.
And the video is available for free anyway. They don't even have to buy it. So they have no excuse. You know, people are always saying, well, what can I do? I'm just a little person. The information is there. It's free. Just spread it. Just talk about it. Quit talking about Tom Cruise and quit talking about the latest Hollywood movie. And just bring up these issues once in a while. because it affects all of us. We can make the world better. People don't realize this. You know, you think about the technology we have. We could have nice cities with nice architecture. We could have nice trains. We could have a nice economy. We could have governments that we respect. We don't have to have these lunatics running everything, selling children as sex slaves, running all these gambling operations. We don't need this.
That's right. When people wake up to that fact, it's about time that we clean out Las Vegas and the whole shebang.
Yeah, people think it's entertainment, but, you know, we could be doing something where people, if people's lives were happier in the first place, they wouldn't have these cravings for this idiotic entertainment in the first place. They're so lonely. People don't even realize it. Look how lonely and miserable they are. That's why the television is their best friends. Their life is a disaster right now.
Big screen. That's why they get lost in all this.
Yeah, they're withdrawing is what they're doing.
Right. They're not getting involved in truth. They live a lie. They live a deception every single day of their life.
Well, yeah, they are, and the economy is a mess. Businesses are, there's crime everywhere. There's low morale everywhere. It's a crazy situation where you're working. There are husbands and wives working just to survive with house payments. I mean, it wasn't like that when we were kids. We have more technology. It should be easier today. I mean, people don't even notice that.
Two jobs, that's right.
I mean, it's out of control. The money is just pouring into things like these wars and into these Rothschilds, into the deception, into all these little terrorist attacks. And we could stop this, but people have to spread the information because they have control over the media. We have to go behind their backs and do it by passing out DVDs or emailing people websites. We have to get this information to people, force it on them, and even if you don't know people, just email it to strangers. Who cares? That's what I was doing in the beginning, just email it to professors, engineers, whoever you feel like.
Well, that's a wonderful thought, Eric. So I'm very, very happy, very proud to have had you on spyman.ca. This is one of the most informative interviews I've ever had in my life. I probably learned more from you than I have anybody on the planet in a short amount of hours here. Well, Eric, this has been awesome, and we're going to have you on again on Spyman to spread the word. We'll get into another topic or two the next time around. So stay tuned again. Next week we'll have on Eric or one of his friends, Christopher Boland. So thank you, Eric, for coming on. And again, go into his website. It is called erichofschmid.net. Then also Huge Questions.
Yes, hugequestions.com is the easiest to remember. You can get to anything from there.
Okay, and then your book, again, repeat it. It's Painful Questions, correct?
Right, Painful Questions and the Painful Deceptions is the video.
Well, Eric, this has been an awesome trip for me to listen to you because you have it right. Nobody else does, but you do. I see it now. I never saw it all like you put it together. So thank you very kindly for coming on. I was most honored to have you on our show, Spyman, and to expose. Our show is called Exposed on Spyman, and boy, did you expose the whole dirt behind the 9/11 fiasco.
And now you know why they don't want me talking. That's why they're...
Wow, right. Wow.
So I'll talk to you later.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye.
Okay. Now,